welcome to this week's episode of the Swap Meet Podcast. My name is Danny O'Hanlon.
My name is Niall McCann.
And we're podcasting at sunset, Niall.
Isn't that...
every man's dream.
Idyllic. Yeah, well, it could be anything.
I'm really glad these days and nights are starting to get a little bit brighter. It means it's daylight when I'm walking to work, which is lovely. For a while there, it was dark when I was walking to work, and it was just like, fuck this. Yeah. You know, and now, at least, you know, this week I've been walking into work with fucking Johnny Marr's audiobook on my headphones, like, and...
is that feeling good?
Yeah, yeah. Johnny Marr from the Smiths. Do you like the Smiths? Might be a swap, so...
okay.
Hold on to your
the
head
book
there.
Or an album?
No, like a greatest hits or something.
Okay.
Even I don't know the Smiths albums that well, apart
Love
from The Queen Is Dead.
Lord knows it would be the first time. Really? The first time?
That's a great song.
You got a record deal.
Yeah.
Surely that must have been the first time.
It wasn't easy come by, Niall, as I know from reading this book.
Alright, okay, fair play.
So, any crack with you, Niall? You seriously are a little bit hungover?
Excuse me, I am. Although I was feeling grand all day, and now I just have this weird pain in my head. But I think it's only kicking in now.
Oh, okay. Did you get up late?
No, it was up early. Had a thing. Round to Nanny's. Day that's in it. Gym. Back here. Get my clips from The Death of Superman Lives. Spoiler. And, suddenly went... oh, I'm hungover. I have become hungover.
Oh yeah, I do the radio on a Sunday morning now. With I sit in on a sort of nostalgic standards program on a Sunday morning. It's the best crack though. What? It's like being hit in the face with a bucket of Dundalk every Sunday morning.
I can't imagine you getting a kick out of playing.
It's good fun, actually, and you get a lot of requests.
I'm in love with the girl who lives in the house. That's the worst Joe Dolan impression in the world.
My picks are usually more kind of 60s stuff, but they play stuff from musicals and Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and all that. Like, you know, it's usually good.
Dino.
Like, a request came in today for The Searchers. This is the kind of crack it is. Like, a request came in for The Searchers. And I was like, oh man, which songs do The Searchers do? And one of them said, I'd like to teach the world to sing. And then, that's The Seekers, you dopey cunt.
On the radio.
No. Well, this tune was playing. But the best crack is in between the tunes, like, because the lads are just swearing and telling dirty jokes and all that kind of stuff. And that's the best crack, like, you know.
Fair play.
I throw in my odd, like, modern reference that baffles everybody. So we got a request for Blue Velvet this morning. So it was like, I got to say, this is for all fans of Bobby Vinton and David Lynch.
That's a film I've often meant to go back and watch again.
Me too, because I've only seen it once.
Me too, and I didn't. It was grand, but I didn't love it.
Yeah, me neither. And I know, speaking of that, there was a documentary about Roy Orbison on TV last night.
Oh, I love him.
Do you know he had a brief sort of idea that he might be in films? He was in a Western. I can't remember. It was like The Man with the Magic Gun or something. I can't remember what it was called. But
with
he had a guitar that had a gun in it, like, you know.
Oh.
Well, he was more kind of... no, he didn't have the... He kind of was without his... he looks weird without his shades on. Have you ever seen pictures of him without his shades? In the early days, he didn't have the black hair.
I don't know if I'd recognize
him. He was sort of sandy, blondy kind of hair and no glasses, and he looks weird.
Oh, is that dyed?
Yeah, the hair... I'm sure it was black until the day he died. Of course it was dyed.
Oh, yeah. All right. Fair point, yeah.
Do you know what's worth watching, and it might be worth swapping, is the Roy Orbison Black and White Night, I think it's called.
I've watched that.
Oh, it's brilliant.
Or I've watched bits of it, yeah.
It's got Bruce Springsteen, Elvis Costello, Tom Waits, Katie Lang.
It was pretty super fucking cool.
Yeah, it's really good. And apparently, according to the documentary, not super rehearsed. They had one rehearsal in the afternoon and just kind of went for it. You can kind of tell a little bit, maybe the first few songs are a little bit tentative, but then... it's just like all of a sudden it. Like fucking Bruce Springsteen is singing at the same mic as Roy and all this kind of stuff, like, and it kind of, you can see people kind of loosen up.
I've watched bits of it. I would class myself as a fan, Dan.
Yeah.
Of Roy.
They played this song, which was kind of like a sort of a cowboy sort of flamenco kind of thing called Leah. Do you know that song?
No.
Song I'd never heard before apart from on this documentary. It's fucking mega.
Have you listened to any of the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack?
You know, someone brought this up at work the other day. He said, I downloaded the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack. And I was like, really? Couldn't you just put it together on Spotify? Mm. Isn't it basically Super Sounds of the 70s or whatever?
Yeah, basically.
What good stuff is on it?
Ah! Chain, Fleetwood Mac, My Sweet Lord.
Love that one.
Yeah, there's some good tunes on it. Like, I thought the second one was they obviously opened the checkbook a wee bit wider for the second one than for the first one. Like,
is it just, does it just play like a fucking Top Gear anthems kind of CD? Like, or
it was kind of like that, but it's kind of fun. Occasionally there'll be a song. You just reminded me of it there, that old sort of cowboy song, or you said flamenco song. But there's like a song on it that I don't think I'd heard before, but it was very funny. It was. You know that, come a little bit closer, you're my kind of man.
I think so.
So yeah. Big and so strong. Yeah, you just reminded me of it. There's just kind of cool little numbers like that that you don't hear an awful lot. But then you also, in the second one now.
You can, they're trying to do it again, like repeat it.
Well, they did it better in the second one, but only because they could afford Fleetwood Mac and George Harrison at that stage.
I read something about, you know, the movie Dazed, that should be a swap at some point in the future.
Dazed and Confused. Brilliant film.
Apparently the soundtrack is half the price of that film, or even more, because it's all these great songs from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that when I was at school, that soundtrack was kind of a big deal. A lot of people were into that soundtrack, even though it was all stuff from the 70s.
I can't like, really remember.
Sweet Emotion. You know,
oh, yeah.
All those songs. Like, and I think Hurricane is in it, funny enough.
This is the story of the Hurricane. That's it. Whatever happened to that guy?
You mean Bob Dylan?
No.
I thought you were joking. Whatever happened, Bob Dylan? The Hurricane, Denzel Washington Hurricane played Higgins. Him in a film.
Good old Denzel.
I think.
He's good at the owl acting, isn't he?
The thing with the Hurricane is that he may not have been guilty of that crime, but I think he.
Careful there.
I do believe I read somewhere that he may have been on the wrong side of the law a few times.
But for what? Like,
I don't know.
If he had a glove box full of parking tickets, I would still count him as being wrong.
They probably wouldn't have written a song about that.
Yeah, but I know. But
a protest anthem about a man who had to spend a week in jail over some parking tickets.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, if he ended up spending all that time in jail and that was his only real crime, I would be like, yeah, I feel like you've still been wronged here.
yeah, I get you,
Mr. Higgins.
I don't know. I really should read up on these things before I bring them up. But then you never know what's going to come up. So am I just supposed to be fucking studying all the time?
Like the like 80s some kind power of wild ballots. Animal? Yeah. Like a wild animal, yeah. Oh, we'll get to that. You had any more thoughts about 80s power ballads?
No, I feel like you were very quick to smack down that theory. I feel like it wasn't given an awful lot of breath and was just like, don't be an idiot.
I
listened to a bit of the podcast earlier today and I was like, oh yeah, we did talk about that. Never went back to it.
Fair play.
I'm not the man to put the work into this, Niall. I just spit theories out and it's up to other people to sweep them up.
Like,
arrange them.
Stephen Hawking.
Exactly like Stephen Hawking.
Just except the exact same.
I'm talking about shit that really isn't that important.
I don't buy his shit.
What do you mean?
I don't buy that whole Big Bang thing.
But is that just him that talks about the Big Bang?
Well, was his theory like?
Was it his? Was that the Big Bang? Oh well,
no, it wasn't his theory. But he came up at a time when
before the Big Bang.
No, he came up at a time when there were like these two competing theories: the fixed state theory and the Big Bang theory. And he was in Cambridge, I think it was, and he. There's a really good documentary. Errol Morris made it. You know this book, A Brief History of Time?
Yeah. Why do I know the name Errol Morris?
The Fog of War and Thin Blue Line. Yeah.
Well, we did another one of his documentaries, didn't we?
Did we?
Yeah. Was it Hot Coffee? Was that him? Or
no.
We did something.
Tabloid.
Oh, right.
The Mormon thing.
Do you know that I could not fucking tell you a single thing about that documentary?
Really? You don't even remember the...
Not a single fucking thing could
Mormon
I
in Chains?
No.
The sex thing?
No. Not a fucking stitch
really?
Of it that I remember.
It's so weird.
I couldn't tell you the first thing about it.
I could give you lurid detail.
My cat is like that. She can see a film once and then we'll see it again months later. Or like 2 years later or something on TV. And I was like, we saw this, didn't we? And then I'd be watching it going, why is he doing that? And she was like, it was, remember, at school, the thing happened to him, and then he went to Paraguay, and he backpacked, and she's like, remembered the whole thing. And I'm sitting there going, no, I don't remember even seeing this. Like, My memory is fucking shot. I don't know what's happening.
You must pay more attention, Dan.
You
must pay more attention in general.
I drift off pretty easily. Something has to sort of grab my attention. Like, we stuck on Civil War the other night, the Captain America film.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking an hour into it, I was like, I'm done. I can't watch these people in superhero costumes being all sad.
Really?
Yeah, I couldn't watch it.
I really liked that film.
Do you think it was a bit, like... It was no crack, that film, at all. Like,
what?
It was no crack. Like,
did you switch it off before the airport battle?
Yeah, but it's not like... They weren't like superhero battles. It was really serious and weighed down with all this like, oh, we killed this person and then we're arguing, should we go with the government? Should we be vigilantes or whatever? And I was just like,
are you physically joking me?
Boring.
When like, Spider-Man was like, you know that old movie, Empire Strikes Back? Tony, how old is this guy?
If there's one thing that's going to grab me, it's Star Wars references.
That wasn't a Star Wars reference, though.
Of course
that,
it was.
Well, it kind of was, but wasn't what was funny.
The thing around
that wasn't
legs.
What was funny about it, though. What was funny about it is the kid who calls Empire Strikes Back from 1980 an old movie and everybody else having to go, for fuck's sake.
Like, the Spider-Man film was good. The Homecoming.
Yeah, it was alright.
I enjoyed that more than Civil War.
Well, Dan...
It's a good thing.
Some wee thing wrong with you.
Yeah, probably. But anyway, Niall, this is the Swap Me podcast.
Mm.
Every week, you and I get together and swap pop cultural artifacts.
Yes, we do.
Movies,
that.
TV shows, music, all that kind of caper. Mm-hmm, we get back here a week later after we've had a chance to develop some opinions.
Mm.
And we talk about it.
Yeah, we do that.
On a good day, we take off and talk about something else.
Yeah.
Because it's usually not the most interesting thing going.
Yeah, we need to get better at these swaps. I think it's because I've already swapped all my faves. Like,
yeah, but then you just swap what you're buzzing on at the minute.
Hmm. Just life.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I swap life.
I don't want your life, and you don't want mine.
How
so
dare you? How dare you? Bowl of fucking cherries, Dan.
Well, I mean, I don't doubt it for a second, but. A week isn't long enough to get to grips with it.
It's a long time in politics, man.
Yeah, it sure is.
Isn't that a quote? That is a quote, isn't
it? A week's a long time, generally speaking.
A week's a long time in politics. I think it is. But it's not a long time, generally speaking, now.
Okay, I'll go with your thoughts on that.
Do you not think?
A week?
Are you not? Yeah.
Things can change in a second.
Do you not think of things you did 10 years ago and go, when did I do that? 10 years ago.
Do you know that...
Jesus.
What was I thinking recently? We are 1 year away from knowing each other for 20 years.
Oh, fucking Jesus. Isn't
no,
that
we're
mental?
Not. That's bollocks. No, we are.
Yeah.
We are 1 year away from knowing each other for 20 fucking years.
Yeah, that's not good, is it?
Well, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I suppose you just have to readjust
it's
your...
It's good that we're still hanging out.
Yeah. You just have to readjust your... you know, calibrometer of what's good.
My calibrometer?
Yeah. Them fucking calibrometers get knocked off center very handily, you know?
So, what do you want to...
I'm low energy today, Dan.
No, but Niall, we've pulled it out of the fire before. I'm not worried.
Mm.
I think the cider will help.
Yes.
It'll take the edge off the hangover a little bit.
Air it a dog.
I'm not saying it's a way of life, but for the podcast, I think it's necessary.
It's turned sometimes. Into one for the podcast.
I like it, though.
Yeah, it'll be good, hopefully.
We can have a beer every week.
It's weird that we can. It's weird that it came on me like this. I literally went through the gym, and I felt great in the gym. I went through, like, the gym. I was doing all my gym stuff. And, actually, something hit me in the gym.
Was it the dumbbell?
No. I have the audio book version of Guns, Germs, and Steel, and I listen to it in the gym.
What is that?
Oh, it's a really good book. It's a really interesting book. I'm not going to swap it. It's
but what, like, dense. What is it? Just for people to know.
It's. I think the guy's name is Jared Diamond. Jared Diamond. He he was like an anthropologist or something like that, and he was working in Papua New Guinea with sort of a hunter gatherer tribe, and one of the hunter gatherers asked him, how did it end up like this, Jared? And he was like, what do you mean? And he goes, well, how did it end up that I am here living in the jungle in Papua New Guinea? I am foraging for food and I'm hunting for food. And you, and this is my civilization. I can name you everybody in my civilization. And you come from a civilization that bestrides the world like a colossus, that can fly in the sky, that has everything you need and you never have to go out and look for it. And he thought, well, that's a fucking interesting question. And so he kind of traced the evolution of human civilizations and how they came to be. It's very interesting. The answer, I'm not at the end of the book yet, so maybe there's aliens or something coming, maybe there's a twist, but the answer seems to be because of how the agricultural revolution worked, basically. That seems to be the main takeaway.
And what hit you? Is that what hit you?
Oh no, what hit me, he was talking about, do you remember doing the thing?
Do you remember?
Do you remember Martin McGuire, our lecturer at college?
Yeah, I do. For Irish social history.
Yes, exactly. And we were following the abortion debate through the years. Remember that?
Yeah.
And I remember him saying to me, yeah, this is going to get controversial because I solved abortion.
Okay, well, it's about time somebody did.
But. Yeah, I know. It's been going on for far too long, quite frankly.
See, my take on it is that if you're pro-life, no matter what way this thing gets sorted out, it doesn't really affect you, because if you're pro-life, then you just don't get any abortions.
No, that's...
And then pro-choice people have the choice. So, enough already.
That's ridiculously dismissive.
How?
What do you mean, how?
Pro-life people, if they bring in abortion, right? If it becomes legal for people to get an abortion...
Yeah.
Pro-life people just don't get them.
Oh my God, Dan. This isn't like legalizing fucking marijuana.
What do you mean?
If they legalize marijuana, you don't have to fucking smoke marijuana.
But how is it any different, though? It's
fine. If you legalize gay marriage, you don't have to get married to a gay.
Yeah, but how is it different, though?
Because if you're against abortion, because you have a fundamental belief that there is a human life there.
And I support that. If that's what you think, then that's grand.
No, Dan, that is... No, that's very annoying. That's very dismissive.
I don't think it is, though.
So you're saying you would be fine that you would be allowed to kill anybody. I personally don't believe in murder, so I won't be murdering anybody, but anybody else is allowed to murder. That's fine. And I don't know what your problem with that situation is, because you don't have... Just because murder's legal doesn't mean you have to murder.
Okay, that's not really what I was expecting you to say, but go on, what were you going to say?
How could you not expect that?
I don't know what you mean.
You believe... I don't know, unless you're fucking Lex Luthor or somebody, you're not against abortion because you like seeing women suffer. You are going to be against abortion because you believe it is a human life, and you shouldn't be allowed to kill somebody.
Okay. I mean, I didn't really want to get into this, but I...
It just struck me. I remember Martin McGuire one time in college saying, when we were doing the tracing the abortion debate, saying, I think it might be an issue with the language of rights. This is not the language to frame this debate in. The language of rights, because what you end up with is a language of competing rights and whose rights takes... priority over whose, right? Which is grand. But at the same time, I remember thinking, that's interesting, but it's not really a fucking answer. And I was listening to Guns, Germs and Steel, and he was talking about hunter-gatherer societies in Central Africa, where they were really, really living on the edge. And that meant the tribe could be so big and no more big.
Yeah.
And he was talking about he mentioned infanticide as a control measure, a population control measure for these tribes, where the child is born, we can't afford another child, and it became kind of the father's responsibility to take the child out, kill it, and bury it, give it the rites, and do it in the desert. And this was a part of that culture. That was something that everybody knew. It was a potential every time. A potentiality. It could happen. And it was part of the culture. And it was part of the culture. And it was accepted. And there was procedures. There was rituals that were part of it. And it struck me that that's the problem. if you have two, if you are a person who, if you are a person who fundamentally believes that a fetus is a human life, the pro-life stance, that stance where, well, just don't get an abortion then, is not okay. Because what you're essentially saying is, we're going to make it okay for people to kill people. You don't have to kill people.
All right, okay.
Or the other way around.
Yeah, I didn't really think about it like
that. The other way around, where you say, well, it can't be done. There is no honor. There's no dignity. It's not happening. That's not going to happen. What those societies had, and I'm not saying, like, it's okay to kill... Let me just point out, I'm not saying it's okay to kill kids or that anybody should be taking their newborn infants.
Such a weird start. Go on.
Listen, I'm just telling you, it hit me. They had this cultural circumstances where you were able to handle situations like that in an accepted, dignified way, where proper dignity was afforded the child, proper dignity was afforded the mother, and proper dignity was afforded the father, actually, as well, who had to go out and do it. Does that... This seemed very profound. This hit me today. Literally lifting weights, this hit me. You're not going to get into a position where everyone is treated with a kind of negotiated dignity, which is all a culture is, really. If you insist on saying there's nothing wrong and you can do this at any time and it's perfectly fine and there's no human life there, and another side is only saying it's a human life from the minute that fucking egg divides and there's no point in fucking saying otherwise and there's no other option, you need a third option that will afford dignity to both parties. I don't have that option, but that...
Yeah, but then okay. It's not really a solution.
But it's a possible... It's like it's a treasure map rather than the treasure.
Okay, fair enough.
For me, in my head, it hit me that way.
Is it okay to use this as a link to an aborted film?
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably the safest thing we could do with it, isn't it?
Can you continue talking to me after this? Have I killed my goodwill? Or
no, obviously
are
not.
Are we good?
Listen, I'm pretty much a sort of standard sort of, what would you say, 60s American safe, legal and rare guy myself. I think we should repeal the 8th. Sorry, I'm getting controversial. I don't mean to be this controversial.
You brought it up, lad.
I know. But we're going from the general to the very specific. I definitely think we should repeal the 8th. However, it just bugs me because it seems to me a very complicated issue on which I can see both sides. And yet there are just people who will look at you like you have three heads if you say, well, it's a very complicated issue.
What?
I think you'll find it actually is if you sit down and think about it, you dickheads. I'm thinking of your man. What's your man's name? Paddy put his poster up in my bedroom one time.
Who?
Oh, the Spuck guy.
Spuck?
Yeah, I went to that fucking Nazi rally in Germany.
Oh man, I don't know who you're talking about.
Nasty little fuck. Anyway.
Wait, like someone from recent years?
Well, I haven't heard about him now in a good while, but I don't even know if he was in Spuck, but he was that kind.
Okay.
Anyway, look, it doesn't matter. I can't remember his name. Yes, let's talk about The Death of Superman Lives.
So you can still talk to me? We're good?
Yeah, we'll manage it for the fucking episode, like.
Okay.
And then we'll see. The Death of Superman Lives.
Oh yeah, you got me to watch The Death of Superman Lives.
Which is a documentary about Tim Burton's aborted attempt to, to make a Superman film in the late 90s. This is just a little introduction by the filmmaker.
Sometimes the interest in the what if is stronger than the actual final product because it fills your mind with the possibilities of what could have been. That's something that interested me when I saw the concept art for Superman Lives. Amazing, strange designs, cosmic ideas, creatures, aliens, Superman with a strange metal S. All these things interested me, and I wanted to find out why it never got made.
Imagine a distant planet in a far-off star system. Light years from here. We've never seen it in our telescopes. We know nothing about them, but they look a bit like us. A star that's in the last days of its life. And imagine that the planet is under threat of destruction. And those fantastic scientists say that there's only one thing they can do, and that's to send a child out into space who might carry the physical attributes and mental attributes that these people have engendered over the centuries. And imagine then that this child coming to Earth suddenly is gifted with powers that come from the great society that gave birth to him. And he not only brings those powers, but he brings a morality. Just imagine what he could do to our world with the aim of changing it and making us better.
So there you go.
What's that lad's name again?
Grant Morrison, baby.
Grant Morrison.
He's a very interesting man.
He's a very bald man.
He's a very bald man also.
Although I get the feeling that's your choice, to be fair.
It
maybe started off being through choice.
Yeah. I'm getting to the place where I'm going to be making that choice pretty fucking soon.
Oh, God,
myself.
Yeah. We were watching my fucking brother's wedding video the other night. And apart from the fact that this fucking cameraman caught me on every moment that I just thought was like just between me and Fra or whatever. Like, there's a bit where I didn't really take into account the whole thing about what you have to do about being a best man. But there's a moment in the thing where Fra's like, there's the rings. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do with these? He's like, well, you're the best man. You have to look after them. I'm like, what? Really? You know, there's things like that. And there's a really, really embarrassing moment in it. I don't know if it's embarrassing, but Fra's making his speech. Mm. And his wife's brother, who's sitting beside me, is crying. And he's like wiping tears from his eyes with a tissue. And he nudges me and shows me, goes to offer me a tissue. And I'm like, no, I don't need a tissue. You know? And it's like, it's in the video, like, you know.
Oh, you heartless automaton, O'Hanlon.
But I was too, like, I was the one keeping everything together. I was like doing the passing the microphone and introducing the speeches. Can't be blubbering, right? Shit to do, like, you know.
Fucking in America all over again. That's all I'm hearing. Oh, it's a funny fucking world, isn't it?
It was just like, it was one of those things where I was like, why is he catching all these little moments? Like, why can't it just be like, nah, 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 and just like footage of people dancing and fucking, you know, why is all of a sudden every dumb thing I said through the course of the day recorded for posterity?
You probably got
posterity,
you.
Posterity.
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 He probably got you the first time and thought this guy's going to be fucking
I
gold.
Think that's what it was. The photographer hated me.
Why?
Because every dumb thing she wanted me to do, I was like, why? She was like, pretend you're fixing Francis's flower. And I was like, why? So we can invent this fucking thing that never happened that we can all remember that wasn't true? Like, you know. Like, it was bullshit. Like, you know, Fran's not an idiot. He just, like, if his thing was flopping over, he'd fix it himself. Like, you know.
Okay. Yeah, there's a certain spirit that you have to get into with things sometimes.
This is why I didn't have this wedding, though.
Right.
I wouldn't have survived it. Like, at some point in the day, I would have been like, everybody fuck off.
Okay. I like weddings. I cry at weddings.
Well, I had a good time at my brother's wedding, but I was just watching the video back. I was like, did he have to put all these moments in where I'm just being the biggest dickhead on the planet? Like,
oh, dear. I remember, because I was doing best man for my own brother, and I was up on the altar for a lot of it, and I really had a fight not to cry.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, and all Karen is lovely. She's from the north.
What does that mean?
All her family's from the north. They weren't gonna be crying at no fucking wedding. So I was like, sold it together in front of the Nordies. Just like that.
Are your family emotional like that?
No.
Like, would your dad cry at a wedding? Like,
no, he would not.
It's just you.
Just me. Whatever we fucking chromosome isn't firing, I don't know.
Yeah,
or
just,
is
like,
over firing.
It's just, and it's in the fucking video where I'm just going, no, I don't need a tissue, for fuck's sake. You know, like, it's just like,
you didn't get the sound, did
like,
you?
No, but it's like I'm one of those people that whatever I'm thinking, it's plastered all over me, like, you know, I can't really hide how I'm feeling, like, you know, so when I'm like I'm making a face instead of saying, no, I'm fine. No, you're grand. You know, like, and then just go back to listening to the speech, like, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's a lecture, like, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I get you. I don't really get you. It wouldn't personally be for me, like.
Oh, God, I couldn't.
Did you make a speech?
Yeah, yeah.
I never asked you that.
It went well, actually, yeah. It was basically fucking, I wrote jokes.
Your
you
comedy
know.
Routine.
Well, no, I talked about Fra, like, you know, but, yeah. No, I... Yeah, I wrote jokes and it went really well.
Yeah, that's what I did. In, out. No fucking about.
And like, you know, yeah, no, it did go really well. And it wasn't like, I ribbed him a little bit, but it wasn't like, oh, my brother's such an agent. Like, it wasn't like that. Like, you know,
yeah,
it was more about like, Fraz pretty well known for having a pretty outlandish, or in his day, he had a pretty outlandish dress sense.
Did he?
With cowboy boots and like,
really?
Leather trousers and just one of those fiery dragon shirts. He would dress like that.
Really?
Yeah, so there's a lot to talk about there. Like, you know,
I don't think anybody dressed like that.
No, Fran does, or did anyway.
Cowboy boots, leather trousers, and a fire, like a Hawaiian kind of shirt?
Like, yeah, but with dragons on it. Remember John Clark used to wear them at college?
Yeah, did Martin Fleming?
Most likely.
Yeah, probably. That's an interesting...
See, I don't, like, you know the way people...
Ensemble.
I feel like you might be the same as me in that when you look back through photographs of you as a kid, you don't really... You know the way you kind of see some people think, oh, that was my time where I thought I was, like, a new romantic, or that's when I was into... I thought I was a grunger, or that's when I thought I was this and that. My photographs of me aren't like that. I'm just wearing whatever my mother bought me, like, you know?
Yeah, I just got taller.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Yeah.
Like, there's no... You can't trend... the fashions of the last fucking, you know, 36 years through pictures of me.
No, me neither.
There's nothing there. Like, it's not like, oh, that's my Britpop phase and I've got like a fucking Umbro top on and a fucking tambourine around my neck or whatever. Like, you know.
I kind of like that though.
Yeah, I like my
fuck, Kat's, fuck the future historians.
Kat says about me that in photographs, if I'm in a family photograph, there's a big group of us or whatever, I look like it's like The Shining or something. I look like I'm from the 1800s, like, you know, and I just like somehow in that photograph, like, you know.
Why?
Like that fucking scene in Three Men and a Baby, you know, when there's like that kid is standing behind the curtain. You ever seen that?
The scene in Three Men and a Baby.
There's a scene in Three Men and a Baby where it was a rumor there's going around when I was younger that it was a ghost. But it's a kid that wandered in off another set from another film and is standing behind the curtain. And you just see him for a second. But like every photograph of me looks like that. I look like a man misplaced in time. You know,
have to look that
I
up.
Should be in black and white, like, and everyone else is in colour kind of thing, you know.
Alright, okay. That's interesting. I never heard that about Three Men and a Baby.
Yeah, there is a scene in it like where you see a kid standing behind a curtain, and it like you just look, it's years since I've seen it, but there's the camera kind of sweeps across as someone's walking across the room, and you just go, someone's standing, and then it's too late, like it's gone on. But apparently, it was a kid that wandered in from another.
That's interesting. Shoot. Did you ever see that thing about the kid at the end of Back to the Future 3 making obscene gestures?
No, does that happen?
Yeah, it's very clear once somebody points it out. I never noticed it until it was pointed out.
Wow.
But he's like just pointing to his crotch. It's quite uncomfortable and weird.
I never noticed that at all.
He's just standing behind them going wing, 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 like that. Apparently he was trying to signal to his mother, who was behind the camera, that he needed to
pee,
to take a leak. Yeah.
Oh right, no, I never noticed that,
but it does look weird.
Jesus. Yeah, I must look back on that.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I wonder if there's any more of those styles of stories.
Isn't there a bit in Dogma where Matt Damon's foot wiggles when he's supposed to be dead?
Is there?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. That's kind of typical of Kevin Smith though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ah, close enough.
Yeah, it'd be fine.
I kind of like that about him, to be honest. Like,
yeah, I hope he's in good form. There was a lot of Kevin Smith
In Superman Lives, Lives, yeah, Lives, because he wrote Superman the original script.
Yeah, and then made a career out of talking about the experience.
But he said that himself. Like, he says it in the documentary. He says he realized that my skill is not writing Superman. My skill is talking about writing Superman.
Yeah,
because I read his Batman stuff, and it's not great. Like, you know,
it's not. It's not super good. Even his Daredevil was not that great. His comics it's haven't
than the Batman stuff.
Yeah. But his comics haven't. Comics haven't set me world on fire and all. I like his Daredevil stuff.
I tried to read his. He did a comic book version of the script that he wrote for the Green Hornet.
Oh yeah,
I just fucking read a few pages and I was like, "What am I doing?"
Did you see that? Fucking,
I mean, I sort of half watched it one night. Yeah, it's weird. Like, it's not necessarily like a great superhero film.
Is it good comedy?
I like Seth Rogen. I can't remember, to be honest. I only kind of half watched it. He is kind of Did Seth Rogen go from being the sort of hip young thing to being a kind of an old man like really quickly? Because I saw him being interviewed around the time that The Disaster Artist came out, and he was kind of like ourselves. Like, you could see the balding was starting, and he looked fucking older. Like, you know, he looked like you know, he just looked, he didn't look like, whoa, that's not Seth Rogen. Who's that? It's Seth Rogen's uncle who's got Seth Rogen hidden somewhere, like, you know.
Well, I mean, he was kind of, I mean, what would have been the first thing I saw him in? Knocked Up, I think.
Yeah, or Freaks and Geeks would have been the first thing I saw him
in. Oh, was he in Freaks and Geeks?
Yeah, yeah.
Seth Rogen?
Seth Rogen's in Freaks and Geeks.
Which one was he?
He's one of the freaks. He curled, big head of curly hair on him, like,
and typecast again, Seth.
He is, has a storyline where he starts going out with a girl who tells him that she's a hermaphrodite.
I need to watch that.
It's brilliant. Freaks and Geeks is the best thing Judd Apatow ever did.
Mm. It's is really that Judd Apatow?
Yeah, yeah. Judd Apatow and Neil Feig, who went fucking on to do fucking Bridesmaids and the Ghostbusters film.
Oh, is that, what's his name?
That's Paul Feig, who wrote the pilot for Freaks and Geeks, and then him and Judd Apatow were the showrunners then going forward.
I liked the Ghostbusters film.
I haven't seen it.
It's worth a watch.
Yeah, I must do. I must watch it, actually, yeah.
It's not going to set it. Really, to shut everybody's mouth, it had to be brilliant.
It yeah. And
it turned out to be...
But it was, yeah, like, it was the reaction to that was out of control.
It was crazy. It was just, like, absolutely ridiculous. Like, you know.
And did you see a guy who I actually otherwise kind of like, and Kieran McNulty, who we've talked about quite a bit in this podcast. Hello, yeah. Kieran, if you're not listening. he gave me, turned me on to this guy, Cinemassacre, is that what he's called? He reviews, like, horror all horror films and stuff. Oh. And he's actually quite good. But he did, like, a half-hour video about, like, why he wasn't going to go and see the Ghostbusters film. And it was him, in the background, he had a Ghostbusters symbol with an X through it or something. Like,
don't need to listen to Cinemassacre then anymore.
Yeah, I kind of liked him before that, like, you know.
What did he have? I mean, did he have any kind of interesting point?
All this bullshit where it was like, it's just like crass commercialism, bloody blah. Like the original one wasn't, like, you know, like the original one wasn't like, we've got these dudes from Saturday Night Live who were popular, let's put them in something.
Yes.
You know, it's such a load of bollocks. Like, you know, like, somehow the original Ghostbusters was some kind of handcrafted fucking artisan, mm-hmm. you know, such a load of fucking nonsense.
It's so weird the way the worst crass commercial things tend to have black people or women leading them. Isn't that weirdly coincidental?
It's just like...
It's a totally different thing. It's nothing to do with that. It's nothing to do with that. It's crass commercialism, I object to.
It made me sick just looking at him.
When I'm fucking stuffing my face with KFC. Fuck yous.
And like, also, look, original Ghostbusters, I liked it when I was a kid. Is it like brilliant? Or is it just alright? Or what's the story with it?
It's alright.
Yeah, am I nuts or is it just all right?
Like, I prefer the second one.
You know, I can't remember that much about either of them, really. Like,
the second one has a more... The second one has a more consistent, thought-out narrative. The first one is a bit more sort of anarchic and all over the place.
Didn't Dan Aykroyd write the first Ghostbusters and the Blues Brothers? And that's a criticism that people generally have of Dan Aykroyd, is that when he writes scripts, they're all over the fucking place. Because he just throws shit at the wall and sees what sticks. But although I do love the Blues. The Blues Brothers is one of my favourite movies. I love the Blues Brothers.
Ghostbusters, look, you can't take it away from Ghostbusters. It's grand. Like, it's good.
Yeah. Yeah, oh no, I remember enjoying it, but I mean, it's called spade here a lot.
I don't blame him for that, because he's a comedian, really. Like, his thing is not, oh, I have to make this perfectly crafted story. His thing is, I need to make people laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
And if something occurs to him, he's like, that'll work.
Do that.
Stick it in there.
And also, like,
as the actor said to the bishop.
I would say that to people in America. Like, I remember being out with a few friends in Michigan, and someone said, that's what she said. And I was like, no, there's a better version of that. As an actress said to a bishop. I said, what?
Did they take to that?
Later on, one of the guys went, when something innuendo got said, he said, oh, or as a waitress said to a, what was it? You know?
Oh, fuck off. Oh, okay. I do love saying that.
Yeah, yeah, I love it. But, the Death of Superman Lives.
The Death of Superman Lives.
What do you think you would have enjoyed that Superman film had it come to fruition? It seemed like it had gotten fairly off the rails by the time it was sort of stubbed out.
Yeah. I thought it looked interesting. It definitely would have been its own take on Superman.
Yeah.
But I don't mind that, really. I don't mind that. It also did seem to have kind of a heart to it that was... It's focusing a light on important things. Like, it seemed to be about him as the outsider, or be him as the fucking person who didn't quite feel like he was in the world. Which is grand. That's always been part of Superman. He is a kind of a man out of his element. So that's fine. I mean, I would have no problem with somebody looking at Superman and saying, that's what I find interesting about the character. Let's really focus on that for this film. I have no problem with that, yeah. And it looked pretty interesting. Although, it was based on The Death of Superman, which was a shit comic. Like, it was just a bad comic.
That was kind of, like, didn't comics kind of get a bit, like, weren't a lot of those comics that came out in the mid-90s a bit shit?
It wasn't
so I hear, like, you know,
great period.
Yeah.
There were exceptions, obviously. Starman was really good then. But when else was Starman ever any good?
Oh, yeah.
That was exactly. It never is the answer. That's bullshit. I haven't read enough Starman to say that. I just know that 90s Starman was really good.
Doesn't Alan Moore kind of blame himself for a lot of those super earnest and serious superhero storylines? He was like, why did I do that?
Yeah. It's not even that they're super earnest and serious. They're just... It's just grim, like...
Yeah, yeah. But that's what people wanted at that time. They were like, we need more realistic superheroes, and then they got them. They're like, no, wait! This is
kind of shit! I didn't like it. I mean, The Death of Superman is a fight scene. One fight scene between Superman and a random character with no backstory or motivation or reason for being there that lasts for, like, 6 comics.
Why did Kevin Smith then, as a comics fan, use that storyline?
Well, you see, I'd say he inherited that storyline.
Okay, okay.
There was a lot, although a lot of it had to be his. He used to give, I mean, John Peters got a lot of shit from him over the years.
Out of his mind.
He's a bit of a lunatic. I was kind of looking him up and he's sort of disappeared. He hasn't had a...
Really, yeah?
Yeah, no film. Oh, no, not literally, but...
Oh, okay, but he's not working, is what you're saying.
No film credits since, like, the early 2000s.
There's a weird clip in the documentary where he takes a phone call that they left in. Well, why was that there?
Do you think he might be the kind who would have asked them to... Or would have orchestrated that.
Do you think that's what that guy was implying?
Oh, okay, Brad. Okay.
Did he say Brad?
Tell George I'm glad. No, he didn't. No. But I think there was an implication. And he does seem exactly like... Listen. You can like Kevin Smith or not like Kevin Smith.
I can't help but like him. Even though he can be kind of long-winded and all the rest of it.
He absolutely can. And he can be a bit irritating sometimes. But his version of that Superman story is so far closer to the truth than John Peters' version in this documentary.
Yeah.
There was like, you go, when you might go, what about the spider? Did you really demand the spider? Well, first of all, it's not a spider, it's a Thanagarian snare beast.
But isn't that a bullshit name that Kevin Smith gave it?
Yes, and it's also a bullshit name that somebody deeply embedded in the comics world would give it, because that's a Hawkman reference, and not just anybody can throw out a Hawkman reference. John Peters could not throw out a Hawkman reference. John Peters was not the guy going, we need to put in a Thanagarian snare beast. He was not saying that.
Because the spiders are the most, what he kept saying, the most vicious killers in the animal kingdom.
Oh, listen, even if you never go out and look for this documentary.
Look up Kevin Smith's story. It's very funny.
It's a very, very funny bit.
But that was like, I think that's Kevin Smith's kind of legacy, is that he's a much better storyteller in that regard than he is in his films, like, you know.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, I remember seeing him, reading him say somewhere that, like, oh, I'm going to give up making films. I'm just going to be a podcaster. And it's like, yeah, but what are you going to podcast about, you lunatic? Like, you know, that's why people listen to you, because you have all these stories, like, you know.
But also, he's probably right that he's a better podcaster than he is a filmmaker.
Yeah, he is. He's like, I don't listen to Fat Man and Batman or any of this stuff, like, all the time. I listen to the odd one. If he's talking about something I've seen, I listen to it, but they, like, review trailers and stuff. They need to fucking get their act together, those two.
It's,
like,
a bit much, it's a bit much. But also, The Death of Superman Lives is kind of an interesting, insight into a film stuck in development hell. This was like a massive, huge film. that just, they couldn't, they kept running into walls, like.
Yeah, it must have been so frustrating if you were there. Mm-hmm. Like, did you see there was one guy quit the Matrix to go and work on it?
Oh, God.
This kind of stuff was happening, like, you know.
I wonder now if that was wise.
Actually, I don't.
Yeah. But you thought that this was going to be a big film, you know? Your man, there was a lot of stuff where they were talking about blank checks and all of it and that stuff. And I think it does clear up. In fairness now, I was hard on John Peters, who Kevin Smith always painted as kind of the lunatic in the room. And he does kind of come across as that.
Lunatic. But what were you going to say?
I also think he's probably not the reason that this film failed.
Maybe not, but there was a lot of moving parts to it. It seemed like every scene in the documentary was talking about, oh, we were going to have this, and then we were going to have that, and we were going to have this other thing, and then there was going to be these monsters, and there was going to be... to hear them talk about it, you just think, how the fuck does this all add up to a story? Like, it just, like, it's... It sounds out of control, you know.
I felt, now, that it was... I actually liked the look of it, now, from by the end. It seemed like, you know, Brainiac arrives... Superman doesn't quite trust him. Lex makes a deal with him. Things start going wrong. Superman has to fight Doomsday. Superman dies. And then, of course, Lex and the mask slips and Lex and Brainiac merge into one character, which is lifted directly from Alan Moore. I bet you that's a Kevin Smith.
that's an Alan Moore thing, is it?
Yeah, the Brainiac. Well, no, there was always traditionally the Brainiac-Luthor team, but Alan Moore... did quite a creepy version of it where Brainiac snaps Luthor's neck and just installs himself as a second, as a...
That sounds insane.
It was creepy. He installs himself as basically a robot brain inside Lex Luthor's now puppet corpse. It was... It's Alan Moore in the 80s. This is why he blames himself for all the shit that happened in the 90s. Because of shit like that. But
didn't he do good some story, good superhero stuff? Like, because I read the first volume of the Swamp Thing books that are out there.
Oh, they're brilliant.
Yeah, well, I only read the first book, like, you know, but...
They just get better the longer you
I was reading that thinking, this is fucking great. Like, why is this never been made into a film? Like, you know...
It has.
Oh, has it? Was it based on Alan Moore's stuff, though? Yeah. Oh, you're right. There was this with Heather Locklear in it.
Yeah,
I think I had it on video when I was a kid, actually.
Yeah. Oh, really? I've never seen it.
That's really B. It's a really B movie. There's nothing...
You see, he was a B character until Alan Moore came along and
turned him into, like, Macbeth, nearly, like, you know.
Basically, well, or Hamlet, yeah, or something Hamlet, like that. Rather, yeah. I have no idea. I have no idea which of those works. But it turned it into a really awesome thing, like, a genuinely awesome...
And also, comic. Like, there was a lot of environmental stuff in there as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, and really creepy sort of little... nuggets of horror stories as well, one of which got ripped off for Helen Mirren's last film. Did you see that?
No. I wouldn't have known it was ripped off anyway. What was the film?
Oh, the film is, was it Winchester? About the, there's this house and, well, now look, I don't know how ripped off it was, because clearly it's kind of obvious. The heir to the Winchester fortune, the Winchester guns fortune, built this weird house in California somewhere. That has all these dead end corridors and strange sort of, it's just a very strange, peculiar kind of creepy house which she lived in for years and developed this reputation for being haunted or what have you. And Moore wrote a sort of Swamp Thing story where he shows up in a very thinly veiled version of that house.
Oh, okay.
And it's like it's haunted because the gun money made it. It's haunted by the spirits of everyone who's been killed by one of those guns. And all the fucking Native American, all the dead souls of Native Americans that were wiped out in the expansion into the West. He did some amazing stuff on Swamp Thing.
Yeah, that's, I'm interested to read the rest of it. Like, you know, because I read
it there somewhere. I'll look it up.
I'd love to get it, a little bit, actually, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my swamper. But, yeah, he did. There was loads of those wee cool horror stories. He did an amazing one about a vampire. A town of vampires that lived in.
Oh, man, that sounds fucking
cool. It was really good. It was, you know those towns that get, you know, when they built reservoirs, they built dams, and they dammed like a valley, and it just went in under the lake, and sometimes there'd be towns there that they'd just sort of move 5 miles up the road.
Yeah.
He made this amazing story where vampires could just where vampires moved into this sunken town and were living in it because they were away from the sun all the time, and they could come and go as they please and come out of the water and drag sort of skinny dippers cool, and things in under the water. It's an amazing... He just made amazing... Alan Moore's run on Swamp Thing was second to none. It was brilliant. But,
Death of Superman Lives?
Death of Superman Lives.
This is a pretty interesting documentary, though, because, like... And also, it's weird, like... I didn't realize this was... This is more recent than maybe I thought it was. I sort of assumed this was after the first Batman film. But he made fucking Mars Attacks before they started making... The Death of Superman Lives.
Yeah, and Edward Scissorhands. This was what, 90? It was slated for 90.
Is Edward Scissorhands post Batman? Probably is, yeah, because Batman is the 80s. Yeah.
Edward Scissorhands was like 91.
I haven't seen that in forever. Is that a good
also,
film?
Also, I'd say you only get to make a film like Edward Scissorhands after you've had a success like Batman.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember it being good. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in forever, actually.
Vincent Price was in it, wasn't he?
What was the thing in... Yeah, Vincent Price. I think it was the last thing he was in, wasn't it?
Yeah, could well have been.
I think it was, yeah. Did you see in the film, the documentary about Superman, they had the drawing that Tim Burton did of Superman with the long hair? Yeah. They were calling it... What were they calling it? Edward Superman?
Oh, yeah. Edward Superhands. Yeah. It would have been interesting.
Do you think everything he tries to design kind of looks the same, and it's up to these lads to kind of like make it look like not like fucking... With the tiny little eyes and the sort of upside down triangle faces, like, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. But I still think it could have looked good. All those sort of photos that went around the internet sneering at this.
It was a shitty Polaroid. Like, when you actually see the footage of Nick Cage walking around in that suit, you're like, that could have been fucking good. Like, that's, you know, right, he looks pretty cool. Like,
yeah,
you know.
It doesn't look too
bad. I kind of liked his Clark Kent look. With the suit jacket and the Mickey Mouse t-shirt, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Not suit jacket, was it? Was it a suit jacket?
Yeah, it was like, what do they call it? A sports jacket.
Yeah, sports jacket, yeah.
Or whatever.
Is there anything that bothered you about the Superman they were going to do?
There's fucking loads that bothered me.
I thought there might be.
There is loads. But it was fascinating in its own... Here, you know what? I'll play you what bothered me.
Have a listen to this. This is them talking about... their concept of Superman vis-a-vis his ability to fly.
He doesn't change his suit. He doesn't look for a phone booth or anything. He just burns out of his suit. He takes off, and that in itself is enough to just, you know, shred the clothes. Tim wanted more of a visceral, physical punch that you saw in those Max Fleischer cartoons, which is sort of a adaptation of what Siegel and Schuster's original Superman was. That was our Kal-El. That was our Superman. He's not somebody you could fly. Tim said he did like the idea of this sort of magical flying, of just floating in space. And so he said he wanted to ground it and tie it to physics. And so if he jumps 3 miles in the air, he comes right back down like a bullet. The first thing I'd done for that was to do almost a Superman parkour sequence on a grand scale. So it shows Superman leaping across the city. Might take him 5 or 6 leaps, but he makes, you know, each leap being the equivalent of 2 miles or 3 miles.
He's much more interested in, like, somebody flying through the clouds and, you know, feeling the texture of that on their face. For me, it was very important was the idea of whatever was going on, the feeling of what it would feel like to be like that kind of a character. So I was trying to get more into that, the sort of visceral feel of it. You know, no matter what other, you know, bullshit was going on.
How do you make flying cool and also affordable?
So that was one of the things that bugged you, that Superman wasn't going to fly, per se?
Nope. That wouldn't be a big fucking deal to me, I have to say. There have been periods when he was not a flyer. In fact, Grant Morrison wrote one of them, and it was amazing. One of his best. Oh, just his run on Action Comics.
Oh, okay.
But, just that one question. How do you make flying cool? This is what it's like to be a Superman fan. Sometimes you're talking to somebody and it's just like, I might as well be talking to a chimpanzee for all we have in common here. How do you make flying cool? That guy is basically saying, I was saying this to you. He's basically saying, I knocked the fucking thing.
That's not what he's saying.
No. What he's saying is, if tonight I'm kicking about in the yard and I'm having a fag, and it suddenly occurs to me, oh my God, I bet I could fly if I just did this one simple thing. And I did it there and then on the spot, and I was able to fly. And it was grand. It wasn't tiring. It was perfectly cool. It was a great feeling. And anybody could do it. It was a simple trick. You could teach it to a child. That's the first thing. Before you teach a child to walk, you teach a child to fly. And that's how you would handle things. And I went around the world evangelizing, saying, flying around the world evangelizing, saying, listen, anybody can fly. It's the simplest thing in the world. And I meet that guy and I say, listen, I fly down to him. He can see I'm being absolutely 100% honest. And I say to him, listen, man, it's very, very fucking easy to fly. I'm going to teach you how to fly, and you'll be able to fly. And he would go, ah, no, I'm all right. Thanks very much.
I'm grand, thanks.
Yeah, no, it's grand. It's grand.
Know, if I had that cup and it was Elvis, sure, I'd be fine.
It's, it's like, why do you think flying isn't cool?
But this, I think this was a different time, though. Like comics.
Well, the time before people yearned for the power of flight.
No, what I mean is, these people. The comics industry wasn't exactly what it was then as it is now. Like, you know, it's not like no one was falling over themselves to make comic book films back then. Like, it's kind of when it started again. But you had these people working on it that were like, oh, comic, do I really have to fucking do Superman? All right. You know, and like, you know, you didn't have, you know, I'm sure at fucking whoever owns all the Marvel stuff, I'm sure there's writers banging on the door going, oh, I've got this great take for fucking, you know. Whoever, like, whatever, fucking
yes. Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Jessica Jones is back up and they've got the Whizzer in it.
Is it any good?
I've only watched the first episode.
What's the first episode? I haven't seen any of Jessica Jones, actually.
Oh, the first season is genuinely brilliant.
Really, yeah?
It's got a problem in that the first season is a very big chunk of the reason why the first season is brilliant is they have genuinely one of the creepiest villains I've ever seen on anything ever. And
oh, right. Really, I must watch it.
He carries it a lot of the way, but he's not in the second season, so you're like, oh, what are you going to do now? But anyway, that's neither here nor there. It's like, I just, what can I say to that man? Like, how do you make flying cool? But what can I say except hump my shoulders at him? Like,
but the attitude at that time seemed to be, looking through the eyes of this documentary anyway, these guys are like, fucking, like, why would I want to write a comic book thing? You know,
the Richard Donner Superman, not the first Superman actually, but the Richard Donner Superman, the first trailer, they had nothing ready for it. They had nothing ready for it. So they came up with the tagline, you believe a man can fly. And the first trailer was literally footage from a nose camera on a plane just flying over cloud line. And that was a ginormous hit because people think it would be cool to fly.
I saw one.
And have done since we were fucking chimpanzees in the savannas of Africa.
I don't know what Superman film it was, but I think one of the first films I might have seen in the cinema was one of the Superman films. It's probably Superman 4. You know?
Okay, yeah.
But when I was a kid, I'm sure I loved it. Like, you know, yeah. I was going to throw a lad into the sun or whatever. Awesome, you know.
Yeah, but, good idea, Superman.
But I think, I have a really, really early memory of seeing. Remember the cinema that used to be down where Tesco's is now?
Mm-hmm.
The casino. Yeah, I remember seeing it there.
I saw He-Man and She-Ra there.
I probably did as well. Cause
there you go.
The cartoon.
Yeah,
I probably saw it. I was probably there the same night, like, you know.
Was that there long?
I don't know. I don't think. I feel like I've got like one or two memories of it, and then it was just gone. And then the Adelphi was where everybody went. Like, you know.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting. But that's what it's like to be a Superman fan. You just have people saying blankly and with no trace of irony, stupid things.
But that's like what it's like to be a fan of anything. And people who don't give a fuck will be like, oh, is this that stupid thing? Like, with the, you know.
You see, this is the thing. I don't think it's that they don't give a fuck. I think it's that they've bought a line that is pure, unadulterated bullshit. It's essentially John Byrne's line from the 80s is reimagining of Superman as a hugely depowered sort of Kansas farm boy. Who hates Krypton?
Is that good or bad? Or
it's a bad thing. You always had this incredible this really quite interesting dichotomy in the character. He was a split man. He was a man of two worlds simultaneously at the same time. He was great. They were first generation immigrant Jews, Siegel and Shuster.
It's an interesting story, actually.
It is an
You ever read Men of Tomorrow?
No.
It's very good.
But yes, I've heard it's very good.
Yeah, it's really good. And it's like fucking... By the end of his life, like, they give... Is it... Which one was the artist?
Joe Shuster, I think.
So they gave him... Joe Shuster. Shuster. Once they took Superman off... See, the thing is... The two boys weren't like the two. They came up with that idea, but generally speaking, the two boys weren't. They weren't a great creative engine or anything like, you know. And I think they were given these kind of, what's the word? They were just kind of given things to work on and say, go ahead and do that, like, you know. And and I think didn't Joel Schuster started losing his sight and stuff, like, and he was like basically blind working.
It's a very sad story. It's a very very sad story. They really did get shafted, but.
But they basically invented fucking... Like, it's like coming up with like Mickey Mouse or fucking... Yeah. You know, like...
Yeah.
They should have been multi-fucking millionaires, like, you know...
Yeah, but who'd be interested in a mouse, Danny? It's just people who say shit like that. Like, it just... It's like... How do I argue? If somebody's willing to go and stand there and look you in the face completely without irony and go, I don't think people really would like to fly.
Wasn't fucking...
I have to say, like... Well, then... First of all... You're either an idiot or you're lying to my face. There's no point in us continuing this discussion. Like, really, is there?
Wasn't Bob Kane another fucking joker?
He was...
Sorry, pardon the pun.
Not a nice man.
Yeah, but wasn't he, like, literally taking... Like, I know people say that about Stan Lee and it's probably unfair, but I think Bob Kane actually was just a shyster.
Have another thing I want to swap, but I can't swap it so soon after the death of Superman Lives.
Just crack on if you want. Don't worry about it.
No, I'm not.
Did you read somewhere that apparently Stan Lee's family is not... Is this Stan Lee being fucking swindled out of his money or something?
Oh my God, is he?
It came up on the Wittertainment thing. I didn't read the article, the full thing. But apparently, Stan Lee's finances are not in a good way. You'd imagine he'd be fucking minted. Like, but apparently...
You see, he didn't own those characters.
Okay. Maybe that's why he's in all the films. It's like every time he's like, Papa, just pay me, I'll put my head out of a window and go, hey you.
Yeah, you see, this is why I did this is why I'm much easier on Stan than I am on, say, Bob Kane. What he did to Bill Finger died in destitute, like.
Yeah, yeah.
And Bill Finger, in my opinion, from what I have heard, I obviously wasn't there, Bill Finger is responsible for 80 to 89% of everything that makes Batman Batman.
I think Bob Kane came up with the name.
Exactly.
Have you ever seen that comic strip that somebody drew of the original Batman? The way Bob Kane would have done it. Yeah, it's like, I wish I had a vehicle to get from A to B, like, you know, or some kind of interesting backstory that compelled me to do these things.
Yeah. Bob Kane, it wasn't good. No, it wasn't good. I didn't like it. But people say the same thing about Stan Lee, and I don't accept that.
Fair enough.
I have arbitrated and come down on that. So there's no need to be just... The internet! You can stop discussing those things now.
We've decided.
Yeah, so I've solved Bob Kane, Stan Lee, and abortion. All in one episode. And we're only halfway through. Fucking Israel and Palestine. They're probably rubbing their hands at this stage listening to this episode.
It's next week.
It's coming. Oh dear, it's interesting. I think what I liked about it though is that it wasn't a lot of people sort of sneer and mock, and the sneer and mock what's your man's name, the guy Kevin Smith used to talk about,
John Peters. He doesn't do himself any favours though, John Peters.
He doesn't, but the film
To make a film that would play on the street. Didn't he say the street at some point?
He does, and he's not a street he's a man. I used to wrestle the artists. I used
to get them in and practice his jiu-jitsu on them. Sick,
look at this cunt.
And he'd let kids into the studio, like, which in a way I kind of understood.
Yeah, no, that I didn't. I think all this,
what they gravitate towards and then go, yeah, go with that.
I mean, like, it sounded to me like if I had to choose between him and the kids, I'd have chosen the kids. Like, they were going to be less disruptive, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But then they used to, like, they'd hear him in the hallway coming down. I get the feeling, I could be wrong, but mm-hmm. I think it's the same with The Simpsons and Matt Groening. I think after season one on The Simpsons, Matt Groening was a pest more than anything else.
Oh, really?
Because the likes of fucking Sam Simon and these kind of people...
who knew how to James make Brooks, telly.
They took that and ran with it. Like, and pretty much everything you like about The Simpsons is based on those two lads and has fuck all to do with Matt Groening.
Yeah.
And, like, he was literally like, did you read
Futurama
somewhere that...
Futurama was good, though.
Oh, yeah, Futurama. I love Futurama, yeah. But I wasn't going to say...
Did
he
read what?
Didn't he... There's a story that, like, when he was waiting to pitch... That he was invited in to pitch something at Fox or whatever the fuck it was, and he didn't have anything. And he just, like, in before he went into the meeting, he just drew these characters, named them after his own family, and said, oh, we'll do this thing called The Simpsons.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that's not coming up with something, though, really, like, you know.
No, it's really not.
It's not, like, Sam Simon and James Brooks built those characters and built that world, whereas, and apparently when...
They weren't even really the same characters after the first season, like...
No, not at all,
they were
no.
kind of different, yeah.
And if you, reading between the lines on some of those commentaries and stuff, I feel like Matt Groening started coming in and they'd be like, he'd come in with dumb ideas, like, and they'd be like, oh, fuck off.
Fuck off, Matt.
That thing where he, in his head, because Krusty and Homer were originally supposed to be the same person.
Yeah, yeah.
And Marge... apparently supposed to be one of the life in hell rabbits.
Yeah,
that's why her hair is so high, because she's got fucking rabbit ears.
I did, yeah, I remember him talking about those things. It's interesting. We'll have to get back around to The Simpsons now for our next guy. We can finish it up. I just thought they did rescue, in as much as you could, almost in spite of him, they almost managed to attempt to rescue John Peters' reputation.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they have... Look, the truth is, this was being made at around the time that... who was it, Fox? No, Warner Brothers were...
they were getting their asses handed to them. Like,
they
were
just had bomb after bomb
and
after
bomb. Do you know what, that bit in the documentary where they were showing posters of all the films that had flopped, I was looking at them going, I don't think I've ever even heard of any of those films.
Oh, like, really? I kind of remember.
No, I don't remember them at all.
Sphere, it was all right. Postman.
I didn't see any.
Yeah, I mean, they were all just all right. Like, and
was the Postman a kind of post-apocalyptic thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember people Kevin talking Costner. About it, actually.
But do you remember? But do you remember the numbers? Like, tens of millions, if
Flop.
Not more, lost on every one of those. And they were still making fucking films. Like, how do you lose 100 million over a course of like 18 months and then have fucking Tim Burton come in. Hey, I'm going to do a deconstructionist take on Superman. Where he's a loner outsider.
He comes across reasonably well in this. Like, he comes across all right. Like,
yeah.
You hear
Kevin Smith's
mixed things
stories
about him.
Tim Burton are pretty funny as well.
Well, didn't Kevin Smith write some kind of Planet of the Apes spoof in one of his comics? That's kind of in Silent Bob Strike Back, I think.
Yeah.
And it's not that dissimilar to... Tim Burton's
the end of Planet of the Apes,
and didn't Kevin Smith bring it up with some journalist, and then all of a sudden it was a story, and Tim Burton was like frothing at the mouth. He was that mad, like,
yeah.
You just don't picture it. Like, but I thought Tim Burton came across pretty well in this, like, you know,
he was going into it with the best of intentions. I also get the feeling that he felt pretty frustrated with it by the end, and he wasn't that sorry when it finished then at the end.
Did you get the... Sometimes I watch these things, though, where there's a guy like Tim Burton who's going, oh, the pressure's from the studio, and I just wanted to do this and that, but they weren't going to... A, it costs fucking ridiculous money to carry out any of the shit
they
that you
want to do. They were saying once
and
the marketing was in, this was going to cost $300
million. And that's $300 million in 1996 or whatever it was. Like.
Yeah.
But also, like, someone like him, where he's just like, you know, I just wanted to be creative and blah-de-blah, and then you kind of think, well, go and buy a canvas and paint a picture. Like, fucking, like, why does it have to... Why do you need millions of dollars to be creative?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, write a fucking book. Like, you know, all you need is a pen.
Am I expected to be creative without the national debt of Honduras?
Yeah, it's a little bit much. Like,
it,
you know, it's just like,
much,
oh, fuck
much.
Off.
Here, listen, we'll put a pin. We'll stick a pin in this.
Do you want to play the last clip?
Yeah, I'll play the last clip, and then we can go on to... Dear old Dana, who I had thought was Dana Harvey for a little before I started listening to him.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll clear that up for you now in a minute.
Thanks a million. This is the end of Superman Lives.
What kind of brought Superman down?
I don't think there's any one reason. As always, there's usually a combination of reasons, and everybody will have a slightly different perspective. As somebody inside... Superman got caught at an unfortunate moment in time in the Warner Brothers.
So when you're working on this script, it is people are checking in with you on almost a daily basis. It was a studio movie. It was a huge budget. I think they had to release it before we handed in our first draft, nobody was talking about money in terms of the budget. It was just like, this is a big movie. We're going to write this big. I got a phone call that Warner Brothers had run a budget. It was through the roof.
It would have been $200 for the movie, another $100. It would have been a $300 million investment.
The budget was not an insignificant budget. It was a really large budget.
There was a period of 4 weeks where it was like, we got to like retool this again and make this smaller. It's too expensive. We have to start cutting things. And these big, huge action sequences that before I had a blank check attached to them, suddenly it was like, 14 buildings don't go down. We're going to keep it inside the fifth floor of this one building. And the Fortress of Solitude gets jettisoned. Everything goes into the tomb. And it was very much always in flux.
We had several films fail right around it or underperform right around it. So suddenly the economic pressure on all of us was very significant.
In the conference room at Warner Bros., there's a big board, and it's literally the size of a wall, and it has their entire release slate for the year, including all the other films that are coming out that weekend. So it's broken up by weekend. Warner Brothers got on one of the all-time terrible roles. Bob Daly and Terry Semel were in charge of the studio, and they had a tremendous run. These are very talented people, but at this point, for some reason, things were misfiring. And you could just see, it was just like every week the horse race was happening, and their horse was coming in last.
Right.
Big movies. So as we're coming in to discuss at the conference table our incredibly large budget film with a Tim Burton take, which is deconstructionist and unusual and unique, what's going on around us is you're looking at the board and going, you can just see the bombs as they're going off. Every time I come in the conference room, another executive had been fired. And as you know, because from a nature standpoint, when money starts getting tight and people have to make big decisions, safety becomes the big thing.
Why would people want to work in the film industry? It seems like a nightmare.
Does it?
Yeah. I mean, if that's your day at work, you're like stressing and ulcers and fucking dreading going into work over a fucking children's character. And you're just like, fuck it, what am I doing with myself? Like, you know.
Millions. John Peter's house looked like, as Kevin Smith said, looked like Wayne Manor. Like, it was...
Yeah, but, I mean, that comes with its own problems as well.
I'm sure his heating bill was something to behold, all right. And you're the poorest church mouse in it. Remember that?
What was that?
Darby O'Gill.
Oh, yeah.
I'd wish for a mansion. Oh, and who'd be running it for you? And who'd be doing this? And who'd be doing that? And you're there with a mansion and you're the poorest church mouse in it.
It's such an Irish attitude, isn't it?
I love that. Yeah, I remember one time seeing like a ruined old sort of ascendancy house. We were walking beside it. I was going, when you think about it, somebody had to move out of that one day, like
pack up all their shit.
Yeah, why didn't somebody just say, well, there's a fucking perfectly good house, I'll just go into that now. And I said it to John Hines, and John turned around to me like I was a fool and went, because obviously everybody would have that idea, Niall, but everybody would think, I'd rather see this pulled into ruins than, I'd love to live in it, but I'd rather see it pulled into ruins than see you living in it. Now that is a man who understands the Irish mentality.
Noel, I got you to listen to a stand-up album by one of my favorite, or what I would have called one of my favorite stand-up albums in, you know, recent years. It's Dana Gould, and it is an album called Let Me Put My Thoughts In You, which is a fucking
interesting title.
Enough title.
So I'm watching Court TV, and because, you know, you're in hotels a lot when you travel, and you fill the time, and they had this amazing special on the Son of Sam killings, which I'm sure you all remember. New York, 1977, David Berkowitz killed 9 women. When he was caught, his defense was his neighbor's dog became possessed by the devil and told him to kill. Here's the thing. I have 3 dogs. And I can attest, if they ever master interspecies communication, getting us to kill other people isn't the top item on their agenda. In reality, it would have gone like, David Berkowitz, you must kill, kill, kill. But first, throw the tennis ball, David. Throw it into those bushes, and then I, Satan, will pick it up with my mouth, drop it at your feet, and you will throw it again. Then kill the squirrel that lives in the garage, David. I hate that squirrel so much. That squirrel is the devil's bete noire. Then you must fry up some bacon and leave it on the porch at a height not exceeding 19 1/4 inches from the floor. I am the devil. Question not the height of my requested bacon service, David.
And so on and so forth. It's a long bit.
It's a funny bit, though.
Yeah, it's the best bit. It's one of my favorite comedy bits ever, actually.
Yeah, it probably would be the best bit on it. Yeah.
I love it. And I like the bit when he gets to it where he starts going, you know, and before I am a dog, I, Satan, will be a puppy.
That was pretty funny.
So he was a writer on The Simpsons. Not during its worst period, but not during its golden period either.
Is he the guy who wrote the Chinese one?
Yeah, he is. And he wrote
a good episode.
I think the episode where Homer and Lenny and all the lads run an ambulance. He wrote that episode. And he wrote the episode with R.E.M. in it, I think. The one where Homer runs a bar in his garage.
Yeah. Oh, really? That was actually not a bad one.
That's when Peter Booker, Bill Berry, smash a bottle?
Yeah.
And it's like, Michael Stipe is like, Bill, sweep up those shards. That's not the R.E.M. way.
Yeah, okay. That wasn't a bad episode, as I recall.
Yeah. It's not the golden period, but it's not the worst period. Apparently, we might have talked about this before, but I did read a book about The Simpsons, the making of The Simpsons, that dishes up quite a bit of dirt. Mm-hmm. And they were saying that one of the main reasons for the dip in quality when apart from the fact that it had been on a while and it's hard to surprise people after so many years, was that, I can't remember your man's name, I think it was, what is his name? I can't remember. George Meyer took over as the showrunner, and he started letting people go home at a reasonable hour, and that's why the show started getting not quite as good as it was, because rather, like, if you listen, like, your man, when Al Jean and Mike Reese were running that show, they were working 18, 19 hour days. Like, they were,
kind of
like,
mental.
And they wrote, they,
do you blame Conan for leaving?
No, like, he's got a much easier schedule now.
Yeah.
And, like, they were saying, I remember finding a hidden commentary on one of the episodes. I was putting on the commentary, I was flipping through the audio settings while the episode was playing, trying to find the commentary, and I went one too far by mistake, and there was this commentary that wasn't on the menu that was Mike Reese going, "Hi, I'm Mike Reese. I missed the commentary recording for the last one, so they've asked me to do this." And it's the episode where Homer has to take a second job at the Quickie Mart, and remember, he's trying to buy Lisa's pony, and he's saying, and they're saying that we had he was saying, like, myself and Mike Reese were running this show, we were worked to death, and then near the end of the season they came to us and said, "We need another episode and you guys are going to have to write it because there's no one else to write it, and this is why it's an episode about Homer being tired all the time, because we were fucked, we were dead on our feet," like, you know. And it's weird, I just found a thing by accident, and it's Mike Reese fucking bitching and moaning out of him about, like, obviously he had to go and do a commentary on his own, like, and I'm sure he was thinking this is the most pointless thing ever, but he really, like, was saying, like, we were fucking exhausted when we did this episode.
It's an interesting one. Now, I only have 30 Rock to tell me this, but to me, it seems like it's probably a good gig for your 20s.
Yeah, yeah.
Because doesn't it work like you work fucking, like, 8 months of the year and then you have 4 months of the year off, but during those 8 months you're doing long, long days.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's the same. I remember, like, any documentaries I've seen about, like, Seinfeld and all this kind of stuff, it's the same. Like, there's a really good one about Saturday Night Live that's worth watching that James Franco made. Mm-hmm. They literally, like, sit up all night.
James Franco?
Yeah. He went into the Saturday Night Live writer's room with cameras and filmed how the show was put together. And it's like 30 Rock isn't that far off. Like, you know, it's in...
Well, that's why 30 Rock... 30 Rock is from Alumnus.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, well, Tina Fey is going to know that better than anybody. Like, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's an interesting one. But I would say it's a good... It pays really well. Fucking 4 months. 3-4 months holidays. But,
you know, the English writers. Do you know, like, the people who... like, literally Monty Python.
Yeah.
The people from Monty Python worked office hours. And they made Monty Python... You know, yeah. Do you have to kill yourself to make these things?
How many episodes a season was Monty Python?
Well, I think it was probably six.
Mm.
But I think sketch writing, that's why Saturday Night Live is so up and down in quality, because they're sketches.
Yeah.
And if you've only got a week to write 2 hours of sketches that are good, not going to happen.
But Monty Python wasn't live.
No, well, it was filmed live, but no, it wasn't. But what I'm saying is... No, yeah,
it
was filmed live,
but they had more than a week to write it.
Like. But, well, I mean, I don't know if they did, though, you know? But what I'm saying, it's a shorter program also, like... But also, what I'm saying to you is, though, they worked normal hours, and then, like... I mean, I think John Cleese is the kind of guy who was like, once it came 6 o'clock, he's like, I'm out of here. I'm gonna have for dinner, have a bottle of wine, and fucking hit the town. I'm just fuck this, like, you know, we're done. Yeah, you know, fucking every sperm is sick. Yeah, great, let's go. That's like,
classic.
But I just feel like they didn't kill themselves, like, you know, they.
That's true, but when they
it never seemed like it was their whole lives. You know?
But that's true. But when they had the whole thing finished and done and in the can. That's literally a quarter of an American TV season that they have completed.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying.
And they've worked full days for, you know, however long.
But if they had to make 24 of them, then I think they'd do it in the same way. You know, they'd clock in and out, like, and if it was, they'd write the thing and then it would be done, like, you know.
Maybe.
I mean, you know, like I think the thing that trips people up with sketch comedy, it's like it's ideas. You have so many ideas, like, you know. Whereas once you have a world and some characters, I'm not saying you don't need ideas, but it's not the same amount, you know.
The Simpsons has kind of proved that you don't necessarily.
Yeah, I just sometimes I think, like, I don't know. I don't know what point I'm making now. I'm just playing devil's advocate more than anything else.
Dana.
Yeah.
What's he like? Who is he like?
He has a podcast, the Dana Gould Hour, which, like all podcasts I like, I listen to on and off because there's just not, like, I'm...
That's how people listen to podcasts.
Yeah,
not ours. If they're doing that with ours, you're a fucking cunt.
But, like, I'm way behind on Kermode. I'm way behind on The Best Show. I'm way behind on WTF. But I only listen to the odd WTF now,
This
anyway.
Week they were talking about, what is it, Rosinski's March or something like that? About how it and the William Tell Overture are basically the same song, just played at different speeds.
Oh, I don't know the first piece that you mentioned.
Well, the William Tell Overture is what?
Oh, no, I know, but the first thing you...
And that one is basically... Oh, you'd recognise it if you heard it. I can't remember. But they are very, very, very similar. It was kind of funny. It was kind of funny. It just made me laugh. That's all I can say.
Well, that's all we're after, really, isn't it?
But in life...
This album, I think he'd been writing for a few years on TV shows, Dana Gould, and then he went back on the road. He talks about it in the album. Mm. I don't know, when I first heard it, it just, like, I liked that it was, like, a lot of the stand-up I was listening to at that time or seeing was very, because I was watching a lot of my friends and we're all kind of figuring it out. It was kind of shambly, and there was a lot of, like, you know, there's a lot of that kind of thing. Whereas, like, this is, like, even, like, the likes of Marc Maron, like, you can tell it's not like he sat down and typed it all out or whatever, like, you know. Whereas Dana Gould is kind of, like, it's really solid. Like, there's no...
Really?
There's no flambering about, like, you know.
There's not an enormous amount of... sort of... you know, fucking, what would you say, storm and drying about it either. Like, it's...
What do you mean?
It's fairly standard stuff, like, is it not? He never impressed me as having some kind of crazy, amazing insight. Like,
I don't know.
Kids are selfish.
There's stuff that came out of it. Like, okay, that's not the best bit on the thing, but there's a lot of stuff he came out with where I was like, this guy obviously worked on The Simpsons.
Called,
like,
Fist.
That was my least favorite thing. Yeah, that was.
I actually thought that was kind of funny when he was doing the sitting there in tears, looking at it, going, I can't come on strike, because he's looking at the porn film Fist instead of.
I think I did listen back to this and think maybe it wasn't the best idea for a swap. I kind of threw it out on a whim last week, like, you know.
I
say this every week though.
Yeah, well, we always throw them out on whims.
Yeah, yeah.
I
will say something else that struck me, and I don't know, I suppose it depends on who, it's a chicken and egg thing, but is his cadence not completely, if you had told me this was, if you had not let me see the fucking
Paul F.
title, and told me it was Paul F. Tompkins, yeah, yeah. I would have gone, yeah, this is Paul F. Tompkins.
Yeah, they're very similar.
Very similar.
Yeah, yeah. Paul F. Like, Tompkins isn't as pop culture-y.
Irritatingly similar if I was Paul F. Tompkins, for example. I
well,
would
say. Dana Gould is older than Paul F. Tompkins and has been doing stand-up since the 80s.
Mm.
So it's... If I don't know if anybody's ripping anybody off, but if someone was doing it, it would be
the other way around.
Yeah, exactly. But maybe that, like, Dana Gould was a pretty early light on the American sort of alternative comedy scene, which was like him. It would have been around the time of people like Janine Garofalo,
love her,
even people like Bob Odenkirk, who would have been doing sketch around that time, like David Cross. That was like his. He had a foot in both worlds, where he was a touring comedian, like a brick wall comedian.
Those are all quite distinctive people you've just named, and then you stick Dana Gould into the middle of it.
I would take him over David Cross. I'm not the biggest David Cross fan.
I'm not the biggest,
I like the sketch. I like Mr. Show. But
I'm not the biggest fan of any of those people you mentioned, but well, I do like Ginny Garofalo, in fairness. She can be annoying sometimes. She is, but they. I don't think you could mistake them for anyone if you were to read a transcript of their stuff. Whereas this guy just seems like...
Well, he was a... If my comedy history is right...
Seinfeld
stuff. He was a working comedian before the alternative comedy thing kind of started. And it just so happened that his style kind of worked well with those guys, like, you know. And he was able to... You know, it just kind of worked for him. Like, he kind of... Yeah, like, he tells a really good story. He had a nervous break or a panic attack on stage one night. He was like, because he was like a working comedian. He was on the road all the time. And at one point, he was on stage and he felt himself having a panic attack. And he walked off. He said to the audience, "I'm going to be right back." And walked off the stage and went into the bathroom and like splashed cold water on his face and was just like, "Oh my God, how am I going to get back out there?" And the owner of the comedy club comes around and goes, "Dana, what are you doing? Who's on stage?" And he just went, nobody's on stage. And he had like proper freaked out on stage. He was one of these people that just did it too much and it sort of fried his brain a little bit, like, you know. And he had two more shows left that night. That was the first show of three.
Holy
that
shit.
Night so he had to go back up and do it two more times, and then apparently after that he said he didn't leave the house for about 6 weeks. Like, he was just like fried.
Holy fuck.
So that's why he went into writing. So he took himself off the road and went into writing and got married and had a family and stuff, and then this is like him coming back. So if that puts it in any different context, or do you give a shit?
It didn't make me laugh. It made me occasionally chuckle, like, which I suppose it would be churlish of me to object.
We might have different tastes in this stuff, because I
think we might do.
I definitely would take him over a Joe Rogan, like, you know.
Really like Joe.
See, this is what I mean. I think we have very different tastes.
Actually, I meant to talk to you. I meant to recommend an episode of Joe Rogan's podcast to you.
What is it?
You may not have watched, but I think you would really enjoy if you did watch. It's the Jay Leno one.
Oh, okay.
And it's a short one. It's only an hour and a half because Jay had business to do and Jay went and did his business.
Jay's not going to sit there for four fucking hours.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So it's only an hour and a half and...
Like this, like, you know, why is it... What, the weed?
It left me very fucking feeling very fucking warmly towards Jay Leno.
He was pretty influential in his day. A lot of people think out of that crop of 70s comedians that included people like fucking Richard Lewis and Jerry Seinfeld and all these people think he was the best of them. Like,
he came across like he knew everybody and he'd been around for years, and he was obviously a guy who had gotten to know the old guard when he started.
Yeah.
But it was still, probably because he had the TV show, was still keeping up to date with younger ones. And his just breadth of younger comedians. Yeah, you know, keeping up to date with younger ones is often exhausting, Danny, and rarely worth the while, in my experience. But he was... I think you would enjoy listening to it.
Yeah.
He's a very interesting guy. He's talking about Rodney Dangerfield and...
That's an interesting bloke, Rodney Dangerfield.
I didn't realise until Leno was talking about
there
him.
There is a really great book by Cliff Nesteroff is his name. He wrote a book called, I think it's just called Comedians, but it's about At a broad stroke, it's from the sort of like the 30s and 40s till now. But when it gets to now, it gets really patchy, and you can tell he's not as interested in it. But the stuff he writes about Rodney Dangerfield and Joe Ancis were these two dudes, and Rodney Dangerfield. Know Joe Ancis. Well, no one knows him because he was like him and Rodney. I can't remember Rodney Dangerfield's real name. It's Jack something. But he started off doing stand-up.
Leno knows it offhand. He said it.
I'm sure they're buddies.
And then I felt like an idiot because I was like, of course that's not his real name.
But
you're anyway.
Rodney Dangerfield started doing stand-up and didn't really do that well, and then quit. And him and his mate Joe Ancis sold aluminum siding. Like, that's what he did. He only went back into stand-up when he was like in his 50s or something.
Yeah.
You know? But these two guys, Joe Ancis in particular, wrote a lot.
No respect.
But he wrote these two guys. They would drive around in the van writing material, and they would sell it out of the back of the van. Like, so they when during the day they're putting up aluminum siding, whatever the fuck that is, and then like. At night, they're hanging about all these venues. I believe it's
aluminium siding.
But they're selling jokes to comedians. And basically, this dude, Joe Ancis, is pretty responsible for a lot of the way comedy went in the 50s and 60s. He wrote the bulk of fucking Lenny Bruce's act, apparently.
What?
Yeah, he wrote a lot of Lenny Bruce's stuff. Lenny Bruce...
Seriously?
Yeah, in the early days, yeah. He wrote a lot of what got Lenny Bruce noticed.
That's a very distinctive voice.
Yeah. And they've...
Is this when Lenny Bruce was still being a sort of a jobbing comedian?
It was at the turn when he sort of started becoming... But the stuff... People will tell you the stuff that he got arrested over is not his best stuff. Like, you know, it was just controversial. But they wrote for Jackie Mason. They wrote for a lot of these people, and they would basically write jokes and throw them in a laundry bag, and all of a sudden the bags fucking full. Like, you know, so they're literally selling people jokes out of this bag, like handing them out. Like, you know, so they really like were these genius joke writers. Like, you know,
Rodney Dangerfield. I would believe that at Rodney Dangerfield. He had a great way with a one liner.
Yeah, and like
I tell you, this guy's got more bread than a prison meatloaf.
Hey, who am I talking to? But yeah, no, it's a really good book, and like you read some crazy shit. Like this comedian who, because a lot of these clubs in the very early days were run by the mob, and if you like rip the piss out of one of the mob boys, or something.
A few stories about that.
Oh, it's bananas! This book is really, really, really worth a read. But
actually, having listened to Leno, I would definitely read that book because it was one of the best Joe Rogans, and it's not even a new one. Like, it was like I saw Jay Leno, and I was like, I don't want to fucking see it. But he just had some amazing...
Yeah, it's a crazy world. Like, but there was one guy who ended up... He got questioned... Like, they performing for the mob, and the mob ran all these clubs. But for some reason, the mob thought that he had done something against them. And he was like, no, I haven't. Yeah, and he was, like, questioned after a gig. Hey, we word on the street is you've done X, Y, and Z. And he's like...
Word on the street?
No, they thought he was a grass. That's what it was. Oh, and he was like, God. No, I swear... I'm not. I swear to fuck. Like, you know, and basically what they did was... They fucking sliced up his face with a sword or something, or a machete. They sliced up his face. And he still was like, no, I swear, I didn't do what you're saying that I did. And they sliced up his whole fucking face. After all of this torture, he was still like, I swear, I did. You know, like, obviously he wasn't saying it like that. He was like, I swear. You know, but he was like, he went through all of this and was still like, I didn't do what you said that I did. And he didn't, he didn't grass up the mob either to the cops after they did this to him. So he was like, even though his face was all fucked up and he wasn't even that good to start off with, he had gigs for life and was well paid for the rest of his life because he
wasn't a
grass and stood his ground and didn't turn them in. So he was a made man after that. So there was literally a dude who'd be up doing these spots, doing this terrible stand-up with this like fucking scarred face, like from where the mob had fucked him up. It's a really interesting book. Like,
that is interesting. I wouldn't mind reading it. It's fine, yeah. No, that stuff was just in my head because of that podcast. It was very interesting. You might respect. I thought, because I'd always heard people giving out about Leno as being a kind of a follow the money guy. And listening to him talk, I think they were possibly right. But I actually liked the way he was following the money. Like, he had this real sort of craftsman's approach. Like,
yeah, yeah. He's
like, I hear these guys saying, I'm only going to do colleges, or I'm never doing colleges again. I can only tell you how I started was you bomb in a place for a while, and then you get good. And you're like, okay, I got that crowd. So you go to the next place, and as soon as you stop bombing, as soon as you're not consistently bombing, you go to the next place.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you got that crowd. And if you go and you can do that in two places, it's like, that's good. I got two crowds. I can charge tickets.
That's what they say. They say fucking funny's funny. Like, you know, I know it's not really the same thing.
Like, I have to respect that. You have to respect a man who's willing to take a place where you know he is guaranteed laughs and just walk away from it and go to somewhere where he's one pretty of the, sure he doesn't. Like.
One of the best gigs I ever had was like in a bar in Limerick in front right. of some really fucking rough heads. Like, you know, right. it was like, oh God, when we got there, like, you know, and the guy who, this he's a nice lad from...
Do you miss it?
Oh yeah, yeah, I miss going around doing gigs, definitely, yeah. I mean, it right at one of where my life is right now, it's not just not worth it, like, and it's not worth yeah. going up to Dublin for nothing and being late, tired and work the next day, like, you yeah. know, I think in a year's time things might be a little bit different, like, and I've always got ideas and stuff, but right now it just doesn't make any sense, like, you know.
Yeah, no, fair play,
but you never know.
Sorry, I interrupted you there. You were in Limerick.
That was one of the best gigs I ever had, and the guy who introduced me, he did, no lads, this guy, like the guy who went on before me was kind of similar to me, like a fucking snowflake or whatever, like, you know, and like there was a dude with muscles, like real fucking, like, you know, protein powder looking motherfucker at the front, and he made some sort of harmless joke with him, and the guy was like, fuck you, you know, and he really crossed this guy, and I was like, oh no, I'm on after this guy, like, you know, but it ended up going really well, and it's one of those things where, like, you think that your stuff will only go down well with people who are the same as you or whatever, but very often you're wrong, like, you know.
Little tweak, little book.
Yeah, yeah.
Here, play something that will go down well with everybody.
Well,
from
let me
Dana.
Just find another bit I like. I like, all right, genetically speaking.
But I'm white, and my wife is white, and our children are Asian, and oftentimes we'll be walking around, and people will stop us. Women usually will see us coming. Bravo. Bravo. Congratulations. So you adopted. Congratulations. Bravo. And how did you come to that particular conclusion about the makeup of your family? What went into that decision? What was your process? I'm not going to tell you. Pie-eyed lunatic at the airport. It's kind of a personal decision, you know. I don't go up to people with biological children, so what happened here? Did your husband come home drunk and stuff his junk in your business? Did he drop a load of tot-nog in the baby bunker? What was your process? But I don't know, maybe I'm obligated to answer that question. I left the house. Let's see, why did I adopt? I don't know. Let me look at my side of the family. The guy who still lives in the basement, the girl with the tattooed back, biker, boozer, dead tooth, too many cats, the guy who talks to his truck. Maybe I adopted because genetically, my balls are full of poison.
It's just little things like that that I just... I like it. He's got a turn of phrase I kind of like, you know, and...
Top knob.
Did he dump a load of top knob in the baby bunker? And then there's like, what... in that? Is it in that same bit? Or is it one of the other bits maybe where he's like... it's gone. I had a phrase in my head that he uses that I found really funny, but it's after just escaping me now.
What's wrong with having a back tattoo?
I don't know. It's just, it's one of those things, it's in a list of things that's supposed to just, it's very like George Carlin sense.
But exactly.
George Carlin was big on lists as well, like.
Yeah, but supposed to what? Supposed to evoke what?
What do you mean?
A list of things that are supposed to evoke.
Well, people that he's not proud of being associated with, I suppose.
What is a back tattoo evoke that?
I don't know. Do you know what?
I
don't even think I noticed he said back tattoo, to be honest. Like,
I just feel. Yeah, that's okay. I get that. Right. That's cool. I understand the inherent humor of listing the reasons why you shouldn't procreate. I think like picking family members, possibly imaginary family members.
Well, I mean,
saying. Yeah, I got a back tattoo. Yeah, really, I don't know if you should be reproducing.
What is that line where he says, it's one of my favorites as well, he said, like, I don't have the ability to create muscle tone. I work out all day. I barely eat, and I take off my shirt. My physique resembles a condom full of walnuts. I just think that kind of stuff. I think it's just really well written. I think it's no.
That's bullshit.
I think it's no accident that he worked on The Simpsons. Like, you know, Parks and Rec.
If he's worked out all day and barely.
Well, not all day. He didn't say all day. I was just trying to recall it. I think he did.
It was pretty tight. If he worked out all day and was barely eating, he did it for about. He did it for one day.
If he didn't get muscle. I'm sure he's exaggerating it for the bit as well.
You can see it. You can see it. You can see it in me, right? And it's kind of embarrassing now, because you could see that I am toning.
Tony who?
Tony Hawk. My shoulders, my arms, my fucking chest, my legs. You can see it. I'm toning. And
how's that embarrassing? I have this
big fucking belly. That's
if Lou Ferrigno had a belly.
Yeah, exactly. If you could put John Candy's belly. Really? I'm like one of those, you know those... fucking dolls. Your sister ever had those sort of paper dolls where you have a bottom bit and a middle bit and a top bit?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I got a top bit and a bottom bit, but then I have John Candy's middle.
What are you talking about?
You can see it. If you need to see it, you can see it.
I have to take your word for it, man, because I can't see it.
It's just not fucking toned. It's just not fucking toned.
I mean, you're fully nude right now and I still can't see it.
Yeah, thanks for not making a big deal of it, man. Anyway, I'm sorry. It just put me in mind of that. I need to start. I got no core.
But I like his delivery, and I like his turn. Like they say, turn of phrase. I'll answer that question. I have to. I left the house. You know, like shit like that. I don't know. I like listening back to it. It's maybe not the classic I used to think it was. There's bits on it that now when I listen back to them, I'm like, oh, okay. But I really love that bit about the Summer of Sam.
Yeah, that was probably the funniest bit on the whole album.
Yeah.
But I think for me, it was the funniest bit on the whole album by a wide, wide margin.
He's got a bit on one of his other albums where he talks about how when someone wants to say that someone is the best at something, they say they are the Beatles of that thing. You ever heard that bit where he says, like,
no.
And like George Carlin was the Beatles of comedy. And like, I think he said Hitler was the Beatles of dictators. And the Rolling Stones are the Beatles of music.
That's a pretty good one. Yeah, okay. I don't know, man. I just felt like... He just went... He mildly irritated me sometimes. And then the rest of the time, just... There wasn't an enormous amount I could... I found that was there for me. Like,
also, just
boring observations.
I think this isn't necessarily his heyday either. I think maybe an album of him in the early 90s might have been a more... There is one, but I'm not as familiar with it as I am with this, like, you know.
Okay. Fair play. I don't know. There are some things... I know you kind of like that kind of stuff, but it's not the same. I don't feel the same way about it, like... When he's talking about arguing with his wife and he picks like that deliberately absurd example. So you're saying if you died and came back as a turtle, I wouldn't feed you. That's bullshit. And I was like, I don't think you had that argument. And I don't find it inherently amusing that you went to the most ridiculous thing you could imagine.
Okay, that's fair. No, I mean? Yeah, yeah.
You're just saying something deliberately silly. I mean... It's like it put me in mind of Steve Martin last week. Like Dana listened to Steve Martin and thought, oh, this is inherently funny. Whereas Steve Martin himself, if you accept Steve Martin as a comic genius and did that kind of thing, and at the early 80s thought, this kind of thing is a reaction to certain other things in the culture and it's not going to work for me anymore. If Steve Martin is a comedy genius, maybe you should take Steve Martin's word on that and not try and do deliberately absurd things like that and expect him to get a laugh.
I wouldn't really compare him to Steve Martin, though.
No, I literally only mean... It's something that happens in Blackadder as well, and I don't like it in Blackadder.
Well, give an example of it in Blackadder.
You're as mad as Mad Jack McMad, winner of last year's...
Well, I kind of like that stuff, actually.
Yeah, I know you do. I know you do. And it's my least favourite bit of Blackadder, and it's... There's a lot of that just sort of inherent silliness in Steve Martin that I don't find that funny. I don't find that funny. I mean, I don't find it that funny.
Okay.
It's all right. It makes me go, eh. And if
not,
that's...
Not big on wordplay.
No, there's a lot of wordplay that's worth playing. But that's not inventive wordplay. Did you ever hear Dave Allen's bit about teaching a kid how to teach the time?
Yeah, yeah.
The time. That is genuinely inventive wordplay.
That's pretty funny, actually, yeah.
But that's like, there's the first hand, and that's the hour hand, the minute hand. Then there's the second hand, and that's the hour hand. And there's the third hand, and that's the second hand. That's wordplay. That's wordplay. That's clever.
Because yeah,
that's something true. Like, oh, I knew that, but it never struck me how ridiculous that was
I before. Saw an interview with some, when he was doing some kind of TV special, when he was working on that bit. He was a little bit older by then, I think. That's when he's kind of been
that
sick.
That was kind of
like,
his comeback thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was,
and
that
he'd
was
hired,
early 90s, like.
He'd hired
and he
some.
Was still fucking good.
Yeah. Well, for that special, he had hired some writers, some younger comedians to help him come up with stuff. And he said, there's an interview with one of them where he says to him, what, they say, what are you working on at the minute? And he says, well, I'm working on this bit about teaching a kid how to tell the time. And this guy goes, oh, God, I didn't want to say it to him, but I was just like, that sounded so fucking old-fashioned. Like, and then he heard the bit and he was like, all right, it became clear to me then that the best thing I could do for Dave Allen was make him the best possible cup of tea I could.
It's a very funny bit, like. But, That's like, there's clever wordplay there. It's not just, I'm going to think of the silliest thing I can.
I like that stuff, though. I'm not like,
yeah.
I'm not saying it's Dave Allen worthy, like, you know, but.
No, look, I get that. I know you like that. And obviously, an awful lot of people like that because that was a lot, there was a lot of Blackadder, a lot of that in Blackadder.
Yeah.
That I just kind of.
Python as well, like.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Raymond Luxury Yacht. Have you ever seen that?
Oh no.
It's like, and our next guest is Raymond Luxury Yacht. That's not my name. I'm sorry. Raymond Luxury Yacht. No, it's spelt Raymond Luxury Ratched, but it's pronounced Throat Wobbler Mangrove.
Throat Wobbler Mangrove. Have I seen that?
Oh, you probably have.
What one was that?
It's fucking Graham Chapman's wearing a big fucking nose. That's not even a real nose. Yes, it is. He just pulls it off. It's not even. It's barely a sketch. Like, you know.
There was a lot of that in Python.
But, there's a lot of. Do you know? It just occurred to me. There is a lot of no, it isn't, and yes, it is in Python. No, it isn't. Yes, it is. You know, there's a lot of sketches that just get by on that. Almost like, you know.
Yeah. Okay. It's.
I met my second wife at a second wife swapping party. Trust me to arrive late.
I don't know. I don't feel that. I laughed at the dog bit, and I laughed at the bit where he's for the writer's strike, goes out and gets the.
No, I didn't like that bit actually.
I thought it was funny, Stallone. Except I didn't know the Stallone film. Is there a real Stallone film?
I remember seeing the video box years ago, but I didn't know what it was.
Well, it's just like a Stallone film called Fist, where he's a union leader, but he obviously rented some kind of porn film by mistake.
Yeah,
and he's like.
With fisting.
I can't go on strike. I can't do this shit. Yeah. I don't know. They were literally the only two bits that it made me laugh.
I genuinely like it though. I just think, I remember seeing him. It makes me kind of think of some of that period of The Simpsons. Like, you can see that his sense of humor kind of informed a lot of it. Like, that line. I wonder, did he do that voice? Because he does a bit in this about Monster, you know. Monster put card in wallet. You know, I think that's you know, you can see that's kind of his.
That was a really extended bit. I didn't. I just didn't find it that funny. Like,
I get you, know, but
where the guy gets the job in the dildo factory and then
grows
up and his son falls out.
If you are smart enough to lace up a pair of thigh high Doc Martens, I don't. You know what? I know what you're saying, and you're probably right in a lot of what you're saying. But I just like listening to it. You know. I like him, you know.
Hey, look, I could almost maybe see how that would work because he does sort of paint. There's like a long fucking, almost like sort of Mike Lee style scene between the father and the son, like at the end of that thing.
Yeah, if but, you see the actual footage of that, he's doing this the whole time.
Oh
he's
yeah, like, no, I figured, yeah.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But it was like I can't. Kind of got. Oh no, I wasn't even talking about that bit. Sorry, excuse me.
What
I was talking about the bit about the fucking guy outside who got work in the fucking dildo
factory. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's my old job.
Yeah, it's my old job. And it's like, all right, I got the joke here like maybe 2 minutes ago and you're still acting out this thing.
Yeah, no, all right. No, I get you.
It's like, I can't, it wasn't a funny enough joke to keep me laughing for 2 minutes, like, while he acted out the thing, the scene.
Okay.
It just
didn't speak to me, Dan.
That's all right.
What can I say?
There's a lot of bits on it that are actually quite similar to Stuart Lee bits.
Really?
The bit where he's like, I walked on the fucking moon. There is Stuart Lee bit that's almost identical to that.
Really, yeah.
And there's a couple other bits, actually. And you know, I had them in my head earlier and now I can't remember what they were. But there's a lot in this that's actually more than you would think that's very similar to things that Stuart Lee has said.
I think Stuart Lee must have said them better because I have warmer
feelings. Well, look, I prefer Stuart Lee as well. But there's a bit where he finds an adult store and it's called something along the lines of Porn World. And it's like, so much porn, you will think you're not even on planet Earth. And Carpet Remnant World in Stuart Lee's thing is kind of similar. There's a lot of similarities. Not, they're not similar comedians, but there's just things that get said in both of these specials. Or both, like, the stuff that he does and stuff that Stuart Lee does. That's super similar. It's weird. I actually read Stuart Lee's novel during the week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know he had a novel.
And he wrote it in, like, 2000 or something like that.
Oh, is it any good?
It's out of print, I think, but I ordered it on eBay.
Okay.
It's worth a read, yeah. It's pretty good.
What's it about?
And it's got a guy who used to, not to give too much away, but a guy who's got, like, amnesia, who's, like, convinced he used to be an astronaut and that he was sent into space to put the Holy Grail that contained the blood of Christ into orbit. It's a pretty good book, actually.
Okay. I think maybe it's time to tell the world the truth. That all the monkeys we sent into space came back super intelligent.
No, I don't think we'll be telling them that.
But it's but that bit about the stuff that he's saying about walking on the moon, like, I walked on the fucking moon, and nothing compares to it. One of the characters in the book, as well as it being a Stuart Lee joke, actually, they say it in the book, the character talks about it in the book, like, you know, so it's like, it just, I was in my head while I was listening to this, but...
That's about...
But no, I get it, no, I can see why you'd be a bit sort of...
I remember, it reminded me of the Mitchell and Webb sketch where Neil Armstrong is touring his acoustic folk album.
I haven't seen that.
It's, do you know what? It's a one joke thing. It's grand. It's very, it's funny. He's just sitting at a table with his acoustic folk album. And they go, Kelton, now open the floor to questions. And everybody starts, all the people, the room's packed, like, and everybody's waving their thing. And he goes, I just want to remind you all before we start that Mr. Armstrong will only be answering questions about his acoustic folk album and not about any previous exploits. And everybody has to put their hands
up. There's an Art Lohanlon joke that's kind of like that, where he says, I'd love to get Neil Armstrong on a television program and interview him and not mention the moon landing once. He said, I'll put him up on a big uncomfortable stool, like, you know, and... I'll mention heavy boots just to get him excited.
I remember watching Art Lohanlon stand up at one stage. I only watched one thing he did, and I think it was shortly after Father Ted ended.
I'm sure it was. That's when people wanted him. Like,
yeah, I think it was pretty funny.
Yeah, no, but see, the thing that went wrong for him was that his stand-up persona... Well, no, but when he did Father Ted... Dougal was his stand-up, like, he wasn't called Dougal, but that what he did for Dougal was basically his stand-up persona. He wasn't really himself on stage, he was more like Dougal. But then when he'd done Dougal, he kind of had to rejig his act a little bit because he couldn't just be Dougal on stage, So, like, if you can imagine some of that material, like, he would have been doing it more like Dougal than Art Lohanlon, you know?
He still did it occasionally like Dougal. He does that condom joke. Did you ever hear that one?
What is it again?
Condoms. They're awful, aren't they? They're uncomfortable and they're uncomfortable. They're hard to use and then they burst and the human stomach just can't cope with 2 pounds of cocaine. So
yeah, that's a good joke, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. At least he had that one. Excuse me.
Yeah, no, I remember I had that special on video and I probably watched it like 15 times or something like.
Yeah,
that.
No, I
so would, I enjoyed
I,
it. Like,
I recall
you know,
it fucking fairly warmly, like.
It's, yeah, no, it's pretty funny. There's okay. that joke where his brother keeps repeating everything that he says. Like he's saying, I say, stop interrupting me. And he would go, stop interrupting me. So my mother got a needle and stuck it in my brother's eye. That shut him up for a while. You know.
his father was like Ken Corla.
Was what?
Ken Corla of The Doll.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. He's written a novel as well.
Rory O'Hanlon? Who, Ardal O'Hanlon?
Yeah, written a few, I think.
That doesn't surprise me. Pauline McGlynn has become quite the celebrity novelist.
Really, yeah?
Yeah, that's what she's doing these days, I think, mostly.
Yeah, because you don't see her on much.
No, she just writes her books. It's all sort of chick lit, they call it. It's a bit of a dismissive name, really.
I don't know. I didn't realise she was writing novels.
I don't really read that stuff now, I have to say. But maybe they're good. Check them out, listeners.
Shall we put a pin in it? Have we said everything?
Have we shortchanged Dana?
I don't care.
I think we've shortchanged both.
It doesn't matter.
I had very little to say about The Death of Superman Lives. I just happened to watch it 2 weeks ago and get angry with that guy who said he wouldn't care about flying.
I need to start thinking about these swaps, because every time we come back here, I'm like, why did I swap that? I've nothing to fucking say about it. Like, we need to really start thinking about these swaps.
I have a swap for this week now.
Okay.
But because I only just remembered that I was thinking about it the other night. And it's going to sound like I'm throwing it out on a whim, and it's a ridiculous one.
Oh no, what is it? You're going to swap like a tea towel or something, aren't you?
No, you're going to think it's ridiculous, but I actually think there's more there than might at first meet the eye.
Okay.
Okay.
What is
it? Are we doing it now?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've got...
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, it's 2 hours.
Yeah, we're at the 2 hour mark, so unless you've got some last minute revelations to bust on people about Dana Gould.
He sounds... His name makes him sound like a skinnier man. Then he was just this kind of blocky dude once I saw the album cover.
Yeah, he does look like he's sort of built out of cereal boxes or something, doesn't he?
Yeah, condom full of walnuts.
Yeah, condom full of walnuts.
I didn't get that.
I like him. I like the way he talks.
Okay. Is that not a bit like the stand-up comedian who throws out a reference that nobody gets? That's what I dislike about those deliberately silly things. I know you're supposed to go, oh, that's such a deliberately silly thing. But it's also, because it's so deliberately silly, it's not a reference. Like,
that's why,
so at the minute... So you might as well just have a stand-up comedian making references to things nobody else fucking gets, and pop culture, nobody would think it was good.
The pop culture reference thing has kind of left me on the island a little bit, because I don't take in enough of this stuff to know what everybody's talking about. Like, so if someone...
Yeah, me too.
If someone's stuff is super pop culture heavy, I'm not going to have any fucking idea what they're talking about. Like,
I went to the Spurs store... with somebody last night, and we were talking about stuff. Just kept throwing up Netflix series, and I was like, oh yeah, I watched the first episode. It must have happened like 5 times. I've no sticking power with these things anymore.
No, me neither. Like, if I catch on to something I like, though, I'll see. Like, I watched the thing that Mitchell and Webber in recently, like, and I watched all 6 of them. If I like something, I'll watch it, you know, but if something's just like, eh, you know, like, I'm not gonna, you know.
Well, here's something for you to watch.
I'm intrigued
now. No, this is what I'm gonna say. This is you will like this swap. Sorry, I'm after kneeing you in the knee. look, it's about 25 minutes, so it's not a huge investment.
Yeah, what is it?
And you will at least, I want you to watch the season 3 episode of Only Fools and Horses entitled May the Force Be With You.
Which one is that?
Which may be my favourite episode of Fools and Horses of all time.
Oh, do you know what? I gave away my fucking box set.
It's on Netflix.
Are they on Netflix?
Yeah.
What episode is that one?
It's the first one Slater was in.
Oh, the card game.
Yeah, we just talk about it now.
Yeah, no, that's a good... No, right.
Sorry, excuse me, not the card game. That is also another one of my favourite all-time episodes.
What is the first one Slater
episodes?
Is in? Oh, where they hold him, questioning him over... Oh, right, yeah, that's a fucking classic. Yeah, yeah, I'll watch that. Alright, so you just picked just that one episode of Only Fools and Horses?
Yep.
Is that what we've come to?
I feel like it's a particularly special episode. And I could give you a list of, like... this one and this one, but you've seen them all anyway, so we will have a discussion of Fools and Horses, but I just want to throw out that that's an amazing episode and maybe my favourite ever.
Okay,
the only one coming close being the exact, that's weird, the exact other one you were talking about, Boyce's first episode with the card game.
Okay, well, do you know what? I'm going to do this as well.
Oh.
So,
you can swap that spicy episode?
No. Okay. I'm just going to give it right back to you. Right. I'm going to pick an episode of a sitcom that I love and swap it against this one.
Okay.
Oh,
you're seeing my Foos and Horses and raising me?
Seinfeld. I want you to watch the episode of Seinfeld. It's called The Contest. It's in season 4.
Okay.
And it's the one where they have a bet to see who can go without masturbating the longest.
Perfect.
Okay, so that's the battle of the sitcoms now, next
week. Is this us admitting defeat that we're never going to do get the Seinfeld episode?
We can do whatever we want. Who's gonna even remember? And it's an easy. I have a busy week, so this is easy. Like, okay, for me, yeah. It's good. It suits me that I only have to watch a 25-minute.
From now
thing.
On, let's just swap single episodes of sitcoms.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
So, thanks very much for listening.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, Len Niall, for listening to me. Thanks to Brian Kelly for sticking up the link for the problem with Apu.
Oh, fuck! I meant to swap that.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, no, it's said now. Forget about it. We'll do it. Bren, I will do it. In fact, in a
weird moment of synchronicity, on Saturday morning, I actually looked it up and watched it. And then later that afternoon, Bren put the link on the Facebook page.
Am I really bad at Googling shit?
Terrible. Yeah, it was really... I just put in the problem with Apu watch. And it's on Vimeo. It's not even like you had to like navigate anything like...
I did a search on Google Play and I
pristine
did a search
quality,
on Netflix.
Pristine quality. But see, I was never going to be on Netflix.
Listen, sitcoms. And in fact, there might be a kind of a weird special episode next week. So this might be 2 weeks before we talk about our sitcom episodes.
So I'll watch 12 and a half minutes of it this week and 12 and a half minutes of it the following week.
You got a mind like a steel trap, Dan.
We might have that special episode next week.
Yeah, I won't spoil it. Look, you just don't know the guy, but it might be interesting is all
yeah,
I'm saying.
I'm so, looking forward to it.
Yeah, and in fact, we could almost... Yeah, never mind. I was about to suggest something and then I realised, oh no, that's not going to happen.
That's it for this week. Thanks very much for listening.
Your gemstones.
Share it if you feel compelled to do that to people who might like it. If not, sit on it like a greedy fuck.
Like a miser.
Yeah, like someone hoarding podcasts.
Like Ebenezer Scrooge of the 21st century.
Guys, thanks very much. We will see you next week for either a special episode or the sitcom swap we just mentioned.
Woo-hoo!
Cheerio.
Oh, Superman. Oh, John. Oh, Jama.